when there's no more room in hell.
The dead will start a podcast. Everyone, and welcome to No More Room in Hell number 59. This is Mike. Joining me as always, it's Mr. Venom. What's up, Venom?
Greetings and salutations, Gorehounds. Oh, my friends, you have no idea how happy I am to be doing this episode and to talk about these two absolutely glorious movies. But before we get to that, obviously, how the hell are you doing, Mike? I'm doing all right. What's going on?
Doing well? Man, it's... It feels like we went from, like, winter and rain didn't want to end to, hey, let's skip right to, like, almost summertime because it's mid-80s here today.
88 in L.A. today. It, funny, too, because I went to see a movie at 11 this morning, the movie that we'll be talking about on Fresh Cuts tomorrow. I went to see it at 11 a.m. today, and I was mildly chilly going into the theater. 2 hours later, I come out of the theater, and it's hot as fuck. It was a little crazy for that kind of temperature change in 2 hours. But granted, I mean, 11 is still technically morning, so.
Yeah, we had a rare tag round on a Sunday instead of a Saturday for our disc golf group, and I swear when I was leaving my house at, like, 8 in the morning, it was nice and had that morning chill, and like halfway through the round, I was like, what the hell? It's like, it's already like 30 degrees hotter than it was 2 hours ago.
Exactly. Yeah.
That time of the year, we're like,
it's 48
cool.
Here.
48? God.
Yikes, that's winter.
Anyways, also with us is Derek, where it's 48 degrees. Derek, how are you doing besides, I guess, being cold?
Yeah, you know, the usual, Mike, is behind the scenes. My computer has been acting up lately, as if you probably heard from some of the editing of the Creature Comforts episode. So I had to just, I said, fuck it, I'm just doing a whole fucking restart. just get all everything that's fucking, whatever's fucking it up, off.
It's like a system restore kind of thing?
Yeah, the whole thing, just factory setting.
Oh, factory set. Okay, yeah. Okay.
I like those.
Yeah, it was fine. You know, like, whatever.
But, yeah, you know. I remember it had to be like a few PCs ago. I don't think I've ever factory restored, but I did quite a few system restores because, like, it would fix the issue and then somehow it would come back, and then whatever it was about the system restore, I had a good mark in there on the calendar that it would always revert it back to the issue. But man, that can
well, be. Well, I was kind of happy anyways because I got rid of my Comcast email anyways, so I put everything on one email pretty much. Besides like Facebook, I had to fucking make a new email for that because I'm just trying to not get email because I can't sign into that email anymore either. So I'm kind of glad that I did it anyways because then I made like a new MSN or whatever Skype's connected to account. That's why I had to make a whole new Skype account, which is working fine. Knock on wood. But, you know, sweaty and working at Home Depot garden. Fucking terrible.
Venom, did you happen to watch Garcia Haney last night?
I saw the highlights. I was at a birthday party / poker game out in Northridge, California. A buddy of mine out here in California, we actually have the exact same birthday, same day, April 17th. So a mutual buddy of ours threw a birthday party for us last night. Pretty awesome. Got us a stripper, lots of food. It was pretty great. And then a poker game broke out, of course, because if you get a bunch of poker degenerates together, of course a poker game is going to break out. So, yeah, I had a great night.
Poker and chai chews.
That sounds...
Poker, chai chews, cake, Chinese food, and lots of tequila.
It was a stripper.
Rolls. Oh, man, that sounds like a fun-ass night.
Yeah.
What I remember of it, yeah.
Yeah, I got to chill, watch the fight. It was an upset, for sure. Garcia.
I saw the highlights. That was pretty insane, knocking the champ down three times. That's crazy.
Yeah. So, on to the topic of horror. Are you... I mean, I'm the one that brought up the boxing, but right. I just have, like, random topics in my head. Do you kind of see the outlook for 2024 kind of looking up now? Like, I feel like a lot of the stuff I'm seeing previews for, I'm a lot more interested in, like, what I was seeing at the beginning of the year.
I mean, obviously, well, I don't...
We haven't talked about the latest movie yet, because obviously we'll be doing that on Fresh Cuts, right. But just as far as, like... I know you don't watch trailers, so maybe it's because I've seen a bunch of trailers for, like, stuff coming out this year, but right. It's starting to feel like, okay, the year, because, like, last year, I felt it was pretty consistently down, even though, you know, our lists were good, all full of good movies, but overall, I thought the year was down, but with 2024, I felt it started that way. The first couple months, but I've already seen I'll say potential, because there's no guarantee they're all going to be good.
God damn.
It seems like the potential for this year to, like, really rebound in a big way, at least.
Well, I mean, it could only rebound. The first 3 months of the year were pretty much garbage. I mean, I don't want to say garbage, but obviously on Fresh Cuts, we review a new movie every single week, and literally it was until the last week of March that we finally started getting some good stuff, like, you know, Stop Motion and Late Night with the Devil and stuff like that. I can honestly say I feel like we're on a little bit of a streak right now with, you know, maybe not every movie that we've done over the last 5 to 6 weeks is, you know, a top 10 candidate necessarily. But I think considering the quality that we got in the first 3 months of the year, April was a fucking banger. The end of March, and we still have a week to go in April, but I mean, between Immaculate and The First Omen, Sting, Late Night with the Devil, Stop Motion, we've actually had a good 6-7 week streak of good movies. You know, I'm not going to say great. I know some people might think that some of those movies are great, including myself, but at the very least, you have to admit, they're watchable. You know, compared to the shit we were doing, you know, for the first 10, 12 weeks of this year, it was looking bad. Like, halfway through March, I don't even think Don was saying happy to be here. his normal greeting after he's introduced on a podcast, because you could just feel in his voice that he's like, ah, here we go, another crap movie from 2024. But yes, to answer Mike's question, I am optimistic for the rest of the year. I don't watch trailers, so I really only know what people tell me and what I read about. So obviously, stuff like Robert Eggers' Nosferatu, I'm really excited for. A couple of other movies that, you know, aren't jumping off the top of my head right now, I'm also very excited for. But like I said, I don't watch trailers. I don't read blurbs. I don't watch or listen to reviews before I see the movie. I want to go in as absolutely blind as possible. And I think that's helped me out a lot, especially with Abigail, because even though I knew what Abigail was, because, I mean, they're obviously – the trailer isn't very secretive about it, but I still didn't see the trailer. But just because of word of mouth, I knew, you know, what was going on. So I kind of wish I hadn't. You know, it kind of felt like it would have been a more pleasant surprise. But, again, ultimately – you know, obviously we'll talk about it tomorrow, but I can solidly say that we're still on that streak of, you know, good watchable movies. I mean, we're up to like a 5-6-7 week streak now. So fingers crossed that keeps going. And yes, I am excited for 2024 because it can't get worse. It couldn't get worse than the first 3 months. So, yeah.
Yeah, I just...
You never know.
Coming off last year, I just want to... At the end of this year, I just want to be in a place where, like, I'm disappointed with, like, not being able to include stuff on my top 10. Because I felt like last year, I was fine with my top 10, but it wasn't, like, the typical year where I had, like, 5 to 10 other ones that I was struggling to put on there. So if we can get back to that this year, I'll be happy. Yeah. So, I guess.
We watched a bunch of shit.
Maybe. I think actually all three of mine our 2024s that we haven't covered on Fresh Cuts, and we probably won't just because we have so much theatrical stuff coming out at the moment. So I guess we can get into that segment. So Venom, if you want to start us off, what's your first item up on the What We Watch list?
Okay. The first movie up that I want to talk about, I can't really talk about too much. I actually struggled with whether I want to bring this movie to the table, but the movie is so fucked up weird. Like, it's not violent. It's not necessarily gory. It's just the situation that the people in the movie are having to deal with is just an amazingly fucked up situation. This is a Spanish horror film. It's actually from last year, 2023. It came out in the States right at the end of 2023, so I'm counting it for 2024. And this one is called The Coffee Table. Spanish, the original Spanish title is La Mesita del Comedor, which is just, it's coffee table. It's a literal translation. So, this movie basically opens with a married couple in a furniture store arguing about a coffee table. The husband wants to buy it. The wife doesn't want him to buy it because she thinks it's ugly. It's basically a glass coffee table with two brass, like, naked women, like not quite naked, but like the form, the basic form of a naked woman, like two pillars holding up a glass coffee table. It's not the ugliest thing I've ever seen. I mean, it's not really all that great looking, but, and they're arguing back and forth. Finally, the wife says, fuck it, do what you want. So the husband ends up buying the table. As soon as he gets the table home and assembled, something happens. And I'm going to leave it at that. Because, my friends, when you see the catalyst event of this movie, I'm telling you, most of you are going to be with your jaw open like, what the fuck just happened? Holy shit. Like I said, not ultra gory, not necessarily ultra disturbing or psychological. It's just... it's such an original film, and just the way that it's put together, it's basically a single location movie. Even though the movie opens in a furniture store, the rest of the movie after that opening scene is just in the apartment of this married couple. And like I said, I can't talk any more about the movie. I can't give any more plot points or anything like that because it might give away too much. So all I can say is if you like fucked up movies, like really, like I said, not gory, not overly sexual, not sexual at all, actually. Just a very fucked up real world situation that could actually happen to any of us. And watching these people trying to figure out what they're going to do, what their next step is, how do we get out of this, how do I salvage this, like just, it is the most fucked up, like, puzzle I've ever seen. So if you have access to The Coffee Table, it is a Spanish language film. I did forget to mention that. Directed by Kaya Casas. Spanish language film, so you are going to be dealing with subtitles, of course. But my friends, if you can get your hands on it, I would strongly recommend it. Some really good performances, some really cool imagery throughout the film. And like I said, it's nothing psychological, nothing paranormal, no demons, no ghosts, no slashers. It is just a fucked up incident that completely changes this couple's life. And like I said, that's all I'm going to say. If that's enough for you, if that sounds intriguing, I would say seek this movie out. It's a quick 90-minute movie. The pacing is good. Like I said, I mean, the catalyst event happens in the first like 10, 15 minutes of the film. And from then on, from that moment throughout the rest of the movie, you're just on the edge of your seat. It's just so tense and God, I can't even really, it's hard for me to put it into words. You know, a 10 plus year podcaster who's having trouble describing a movie, but it's true. It's just one of those things that if I could talk about the plot, it would make a lot more sense, but I'm just not going to because you guys need to see this on your own. So, like I said, if it sounds like something that you vaguely might be into, I would strongly recommend it. It's not necessarily going to be a top 10 candidate for me. Hell, I even struggle calling it a horror film because there is a horrible event that happens in the movie, but to call it a horror film might be a little bit of a misnomer. So, like I said, if you're into psychological thrillers that tend to get a little fucked up, I would strongly recommend The Coffee Table. Like I said, Spanish language. good direction, good editing, good performances. Like, it's just a solid film all around. And just one of the most tense things I've watched in a very long time. So there you go. The Coffee Table, 2023. Check it out.
Looks interesting.
Yeah, I remember you mentioned this one, I think, like, right after you had initially seen it. And I do want to watch it. It looks interesting as hell from the synopsis. Even that movie poster art looks
crazy. Yeah, the poster is awesome, and it really does. I love how it's cracked glass, because the man's psyche definitely cracks in this fucking movie. So, yeah, that poster is awesome.
Yeah, it looks cool.
Check it out if you get a chance.
Sounds good.
All right, Derek, how about you?
So I watched the movie that we actually talked about last show, because you guys did like a spatial review on it. Like, you know, like Venom brought it up, but then you saw it also, Mike, and it's called Frogman.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so I checked that out because it sounded interesting enough, found footage, you know. And, yeah, I dug it. I actually liked it a lot for what it was. You know, does it add anything new to the found footage genre? Like, not really, but it's just kind of like I was kind of interested because it's kind of a unique subject matter. Because who the fuck ever thought of a movie about frog people? You know what I mean? You know? But anyways, yeah, I dug it a lot for what it was. I do agree with, like, I can see why Venom was, like for the first, like, half of the movie, like, not give a fuck. But then, you know, I kind of didn't mind it as much because I knew what I was getting myself into, too, with those characters. But I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever. You know, like, the nagging actress lady. Like,
oh, God.
She was terrible. Like, let's go shopping for this hat. I'm like, we don't need this right now.
And her stupid Southern accent, her fake Western girl accent, it grated on me the whole movie.
I felt like the main character. Let's stop doing that. Yeah. But then when the actual, like, frogmen stuff comes and, you know, it turns into kind of, like, Shadows of Innsmouth, kind of, you know. But, yeah, I dug it a lot for what it was. It was a fun little found footage movie, brain waster. It's like we said during the original review, it's not like Outwaters, which is like 3 hours of asshole characters. No. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it gets that going for it. So I do recommend giving it a watch. You can rent it. Cheap rent. Good stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you know, like I've already said on multiple occasions, I can narrow down this review to one sentence. I hate all of these characters, but the second half of the movie is great. That's my one-line review for this movie.
I love the poster.
Yeah, the poster's good, too. I'm very cool with the poster. It's got that kind of little bit of mystery to it. It's not bad. But, yeah, just like I said, the whole first half, I just wanted to stop watching. But if the movie wasn't so short, because, I mean, the movie's like, what, 80 or 84 minutes or something like that? It's a short-ass movie. So if it was anything over 95 minutes, I probably would have stopped it after like 20 to 30 minutes because they were just, like I said, I don't necessarily have to like characters on the screen to follow the movie, but if they are actively doing shit to make me hate them, then it becomes a drag. Then it's like, okay, I'm just waiting for these people to fucking die now. And I hate when that happens because it drags out the movie. It makes an 80-minute movie feel like it's 2 hours long. So, yeah, if you can deal with the shitty characters at the beginning, all three of them, too, even the one that we're kind of supposed to be behind, he's even an asshole in his own right. So, yeah, if you can deal with shitty characters, like I know Mike is a lot more forgiving of shit characters than I am. And when I say shit, I mean unlikable. I don't mean that they're bad actors necessarily, whatever, but just unlikable characters that just, you know, they're just fodder for the killer. It's just like, can we just get to it? Just Frogman could have been a 20-minute short, and I probably would have been way, way happier with it.
Frogman.
Frogman croaking again. All right, I have
nothing.
My first one up. And this is a movie called Stranger that is now on Hulu. I think they're calling this a 2024 release. So the interesting story behind this, so it stars Micah Monroe as the main chick. I forgot the guy's name, the main guy. He is a little familiar here. And the basic setup is she gets in. I think she's the Uber driver, maybe. And, you know, someone gets in and things go awry. You don't need much more setup than that, really. So the backstory of this one is, you guys remember that streaming service from either a year or 2 years ago? It was like Quibi, I think it was called.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the idea behind Quibi wasn't supposed to be like shorts, like a lot of short horror stuff or thriller stuff.
Oh, okay.
Stuff.
I remember the ad for this. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I remember.
Yeah. So basically what Hulu did is they took, because that service kind of came and went like quick. So there was a lot of stuff on there that probably most people hadn't seen, so it either got scrapped, but I guess Hulu saw something in this specific thing where they gathered up everything that was already filmed, and I think maybe they filmed some more stuff, but they definitely for sure recut it into like a feature-length movie instead of like a series of like shorts. So it's pretty good. I would say if anything, like the third act gets a little large for like what the story was leading up to that. There's something with like some of these movies, especially like the independent lower budget movies, where like, to me, it's like they have a good thing going through the first two acts, and they really go for some like bold decisions with like the scope of things in the third act, and sometimes it works, but sometimes it doesn't. And I would say this one, it was kind of unnecessary. I still overall liked the movie. I thought good tension, and I think Mike Monroe is really good. She continues to pop up in things, kind of on like, I would say, mid to lower budget stuff like that I didn't know ahead of time she was doing, and it's nice to see. She's also, I think, in that Long Legs movie coming out by Neon Pictures later on.
God is a Bullet, awesome movie that she just said was in.
Yeah, that was last year, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you guys, I'm assuming you maybe haven't seen it on Hulu, but had you heard about this on Quibi or seen any of it on Quibi before?
Oh, yeah. I don't watch Quibi.
Yeah, I never watched Quibi. I do remember like when Quibi was still a thing, seeing ads for this when it was first popping up. I'm kind of curious, you know, like that short form format's a thing that I can't really... You know, I'm like, okay, whatever, but maybe I check this out now that it's like a full feature, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, I'm not sure if it was actually, like, if there was enough shorts to put together that it was kind of a full-length feature just broken up, or if Hulu actually shot more. Because when you watch it on Hulu, it does feel like a fleshed-out enough story, and it doesn't feel like they're stretching to make it feature-length, so maybe there already was 90 minutes worth of a movie, and they just had to like cut it together into to one thing. So that could be the case too. I also never had Quibi, so I can't really say yay or nay on whether
how much it was. Just like a quick fucking YouTube ad. You know what I mean? That's all I saw.
I actually applied for a job at Quibi as a software engineer when they first kind of popped up. Very glad I didn't get the job, considering they filed bankruptcy less than a year later. So, yeah, I'm good.
So they totally went under. Do they didn't get bought out again?
They're still around. I mean, you can file bankruptcy and continue doing business. It doesn't mean that you have to shut the business down.
Right,
But they did file bankruptcy within, like, a year of them starting, you know. And that was after, like, the big marketing push, and they were talking about all the financial backing that they had and all the celebrity backing that they had. And, yeah, within a year it was shit. So
I'm
glad I didn't get that job.
I wonder if the brainchild behind that was trying to look at, like, the TikTok and YouTube shorts trend and think, oh, well, why don't we make, like, short story stuff because all the kids like short stuff. But I guess it probably doesn't translate to narrative driven stuff, because like TikTok and YouTube, I have a TikTok app, but I don't have an account, or I don't really frequent it. I just have it because when my wife sends me stuff, I want to be able to see it. But that's not most of the, you know, that's not like narrative story driven scripted stuff. It's social media. So it might not translate. Maybe they did a miscalculation, but I don't really know what the brainchild was behind Quibi. I couldn't tell you 100%. But yeah, so
I mean, a lot of what they were pushing to me when I applied there was celebrities doing their own content, like content that they maybe wouldn't be able to get funding from large studios to be able to make a full production. But then they could get, you know, spend a little bit of their own money, make like a 5-minute short that's like the basic concept of what they want to do. And, you know, they would put that out for free to the public. But like I said, I literally have never even watched a video on Quibi. After I didn't get the job, I kind of soured to the company and never went back.
Be like, serves you right, motherfuckers.
All right, yeah. So that was the Stranger. That was the movie. But yeah, so for anyone interested or curious, it is on Hulu now as like a full-length feature. So there you go. Back to you, Venom.
All right, the next one I'm going to talk about is something that's on Netflix currently. It is, at least for the States, it is a 2024 release in its native country of, I think, it's either India or Indonesia. It came out in 2023. This film is called Indigo. This is supernatural horror, basically about these people that are called indigos. And what that means is that their aura is the color of indigo, which is kind of like a purple color. And because of their aura, they're able to see ghosts. They're able to see and not necessarily communicate with them or commune with them, but they could see them. They can hear them. They know that they're there. And these are all malevolent spirits. These are all very evil, demonic things in this movie. Overall, I mean, you guys know I love my foreign horror. I love Asian horror especially. This movie is good, but it definitely falls a few steps short of great. I mean, it's got a 2-hour runtime, first of all. So 2 hours is a lot for a supernatural horror film. And I wasn't the biggest fan of the ending. Like, I didn't like the way that the story culminated necessarily. There are some good scares throughout. Obviously, it's a supernatural horror, so, you know, there's going to be some jump scares here and there. It is well acted, well performed, well directed. It's just the story. I wish the story had just a little bit more substance to it. You know, like they spend 2 hours with this one concept of this girl potentially might be an indigo. So, you know, let's figure out if she is, and if she is, we'll help her out. Because, well, I don't want to get too deep into the story, so I'll leave it at that. But you know, like I said, let it be known that this is a supernatural horror movie that is good, but falls a little bit short of great. But it is on Netflix, so if you have a Netflix account, it's still worth checking out. It's available in 4K. It looks really nice on Netflix. Like I said, just be prepared for the 2-hour runtime and, you know, maybe not the greatest pacing in the world, but overall a solid film. I'm not sure if either of you guys have seen this yet.
It's not on my watch list, so I was like, please be good, please be good, when you mentioned it.
Yeah, like I said, it's good, it's just not great. So I don't know if it's a high priority to get to. I think you should watch it before the end of the year because it might speak to you more than it spoke to me. It is an objectively good film. It just kind of, like I said, it falls short of being a potential top 10 candidate, but still watchable. So I would still give it a recommend.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, because everyone's Netflix is kind of different, and I think I kind of brought it up on our last episode, but I feel like one of the things that happens, like, once you start watching more international stuff, then you start getting recommended more national stuff, and it's so hard, because a lot of it we hear so little about here in the States, that once you start getting recommended, like, all these, like, foreign supernatural movies, then it's hard to like make a distinction because like they all look that like they have the potential to be good, but all their plots are like so similar sounding that like you kind of get in this trap of like, I don't even know which one, because like
they meld together,
because I don't have time to watch them all. Like if I could, if this was 20 years ago, you know, when I was single, no kids, well, not single, but I had no kids, and I could sit around and watch movies all day, I'd watch them all. But, like, now it's almost frustrating because I'm like, I just need to know which, like, Netflix or someone tell me what are, like, the top three in this category for this year, and I'll watch the three, but I can't watch 15 of them to figure out, like, which ones are the best ones, you know?
Yeah, I hear you there. Like, some of them I fucking watch, and I'm like, yeah, it was pretty good, but then I'll forget about them, because then you watch fucking five more of them, and they're like, they melt together after a while, besides some stand, like, and you know, pretty much like the big ones that people talk about, I dig, you know what I mean? But then all of a sudden it's like fucking, yeah. Then you just gotta, they just meld in the back burner because they all like the same fucking movie at the end of the day.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, that's kind of been my feelings on just like movies in general. Like, it's not even just a horror genre thing. I just think there's a lot of movies out there in existence, obviously, that are good. Like, you don't have any complaints about them. You have fun while watching it. But it's fewer the amount of movies that, like, hit that next tier of, like, okay, not only was that good, but it was either very good or great. It was memorable. It's going to have me thinking about it. And I always want to try to, like, find those movies first. Because, you know, when you have limited time to, like, watch movies, it's like you're always hoping that what you're watching is going to get to that next level. And that's not, like, a criticism of, like, the movies that are, like, just kind of good. Because those can be serviceable. Like, you need those movies around, too, you know, for those nights where you have nothing to watch. Yeah. But, like, sometimes it's like when I have a list of, like, 20 Indonesian supernatural horror movies in my Netflix queue, and I know I can't watch 20 of them, I'm like, I need to know. Give me, like, and sometimes I turn to, like, our chats on Messenger and be like, who's seen these and who can tell me, like, which ones they think are the best, just so I can have at least, like, maybe a, like, a hierarchy of priority list to say, okay, I need to, like, seek these few ones out first, and then I can, like, get to the other ones when I have time.
Yeah. I definitely agree with Derek that when you watch as much, you know, foreign horror, especially Asian horror, as we do, they do start to kind of meld together. But I will say that the exceptional ones definitely rise to the top. You know, stuff like Metamorphosis, Queen of Black Magic, Satan's Slaves. I mean, those are all spectacular films, and they yeah, definitely, you know, and they're memorable too. Like, I can remember specific scenes from all three of those movies, and I don't get confused as to, oh, was this in Satan's Slaves or Satan's Slaves 2? You know what I mean? So
yeah,
the exceptional ones definitely rise to the top.
And again, I think that's a big difference between, like, my Netflix queue from, like, 5-6 years ago and now is, like, back then. And that might have even been, like, Shudder. I don't even remember. It's hard to
remember. It's all fucking South Korean shit.
Yeah, it's hard to remember what's on what service sometimes. But, like, yeah. I would say 5 to 6 years ago, the only ones that would, like, make it onto people's queues are the ones that had, like, some kind of, like, international buzz, or, like, they got thrown onto the streaming service with kind of, like, that pedigree already. But then once you start, you know, like, sometimes at the end of a Netflix movie or show, it'll be like, so, did you like it, love it, or not for me? As soon as you start putting love it on, like, a certain type of film.
Love it.
Next time you open your Netflix queue, sure, Here's 20 more of them that you can figure out which ones are the good ones or not.
Or unless you watch, like, May the Devil Take You, and then you have nightmare fuel for weeks, because that movie actually scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Hey, Netflix comes through every now and again. I mean, maybe not as often as they used to. Like, the glory days of 2018 and 2019, when Netflix was releasing a great horror film almost every month. Like, those days are definitely gone, but there's still some diamonds in the rough. You just kind of got to look for them, sadly.
Yeah, I feel like I get a lot of good recommendations that they're from, like, the previous year. It's like a lot of, like, I'm noticing in my queue, I get recommended a lot of stuff from Asia, from Europe, from Mexico, from Spain, and I'll look at it and it'll say, like, 2023, and then I have to, like, go figure out, okay, is that 2023 a native country, and this is, like, its first time available here? Because if that's the case, I'm counting it as 2024. It's just I have to research to figure it out, because some legitimately are, like...
Yeah, because they don't do any fucking advertisements for some of those movies. They just throw them on there sometimes.
Yeah, they just show up. And, like, don't get me wrong, I'm glad that they're being made available. I just wish like I had more like.
Yeah, I wish that I was getting more. I wish that I was getting more fucking buzz. To, oh, it's going to be popping up on this day instead of this fucking Zack Snyder movie that's coming up.
Dude, let me tell you, I started watching I think it was like a German, like a natural disaster show called Rain or The Rain or something.
Oh, I watched that, yeah.
After like I watched 3-4 episodes on it, the next time I opened Netflix, it was like every country has like now I got one on my recommended list about a volcano erupting, like apocalyptic every. I'm like, God damn, that was quick, Netflix. Like you're really on it.
They keep trying to make me watch that sci-fi South Korean show.
Yeah, man. Yeah, there's like it's amazing how these algorithms are just getting like slicker and more efficient and quick. They're like really on the ball with doing it. But anyways, I think Derek, you're up next with your second one.
Yeah, sure. The next movie I'm going to talk about is actually from the company that actually made one of the movies we're going to talk about later, and that's Necrostorm. This is one I actually had for a while, and I never actually fucking, because I actually backed this movie being made. Like, my name's actually in the fucking credits of this movie. And that is Hotel Inferno 3, The Castle of Screams. Have you guys ever heard of the Hotel Inferno series?
I've heard the title, but I've never seen anything now.
Okay, so Hotel Inferno, like, is pretty much Necrostorm's version of, like, a first-person movie. Kind of like a Hardcore Henry.
Okay, yeah.
So it's kind of like that, where the first one, you follow, like, a hitman in, like, this rundown hotel, and he's on a hit. But then he finds out that this hotel is actually one of the gateways to hell. And there's a bunch of demons in this hotel. And he's, like, running around. And actually, my buddy actually borrowed the first one. And he watched it. He's like, he couldn't get past, like, the first fucking 20 minutes of it. Because it's all in-your-face gore. Because pretty much, like, because it's first person. So you're seeing, like, all the fucking gore right there. You know, so I get it. But then after that, then it goes into, like, this journey into hell itself. Which is pretty fucking awesome if you watch Hotel Inferno 2. It kind of feels very doomish. It starts to turn kind of video gamey, which is kind of a negative of this series, because there are some parts where you're like, you got to go into this secret room through the secret portal to get the secret objects, because you got to collect these secret objects, and you know, it feels kind of like you're watching like a live action video game with cool creatures, cool fucking special effects by Guillermo del Toro, who we're going to talk about later with a. One of the movies we're going to be talking about to the effects for that movie. But, yeah, Hotel Inferno, if you're into that kind of, like, thing, like, in your face, like, gore, fucking blood sprays, you know, it's kind of a different feel because of the first-person aspect of it, you know. And I wouldn't recommend it for everybody because, you know, there's some scenes where he's, like, running and shit and, like, high-speed gore and shit like that. Like, but other than that, yeah, I would check it out. You know, it's a worthy addition. They're making part 4 right now. And this one's Hotel Inferno 3, The Castle of Screams.
I already love the title, so I'm in.
It even sounds like a video game level.
I know. Everything you said, it just sounds like a big old fetch quest. And, hey, sometimes fetch quests can be cool. So I'm down to check this out.
And the cool thing about the sequels is, like, the first one's, like, probably the longest one. They run, like, a little bit over, like, an hour. They're not even that long of a movie. Nice. So, you know, so they're not – they don't feel long because if they were, like – longer, they could be a little bit more tedious, I think, in my opinion.
Sure. You can only take so much gore.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right. I have not seen that, but Necrostorm films usually, I mean, if for anyone unfamiliar, well, I would say if you know what to expect going in, they're usually always going to be a fun time at the bare minimum.
Yeah. For sure. Like, I watched recently, too, like, Little Necro Red, which is, like, this fucked up version of Little Red Riding Hood, where the director himself, actually, Gilio DeSante, plays the grandmother, who's, like, a... Yeah, it's pretty fucking awesome. I loved it.
Cool. All right, my next one up is actually probably, out of the three, it's the surprise. I've seen it now start to get talked about in the last couple of weeks, a little bit more on social media. I've seen people doing reviews on it. And this is probably, I'd have to make a list of every Tubi original I've seen, which isn't long, mind you, but...
Titanic 666.
And to make sure of it, but, like, I'm pretty safe in saying, at least in the... Off the top of my head, this is probably the best Tubi original I've watched. I know everyone's kind of in their own place about how many they've seen and what they've liked, but this one is called Low Life. And the basic setup on this is a family's road tripping. I can't remember if it's across the country or if they have a specific destination in mind, or if they're just kind of hitting the open road. And basically, situation, like, whatever goes right in a horror movie when you're road tripping, right? So they're in their RV, and they take on a hitchhiker. That's never a good idea in a horror movie, so that's not exactly a spoiler, but I'm not going to, you know, say anything that actually happens. Let's just say there's, like, a twist pretty early in the movie that came out of nowhere. Not that it's a bad thing. It just took me by surprise. And then the movie hits its next kind of, like, scene or location. And it gets crazier and crazier as it goes. I thought this movie was absolutely fun. Like, If I wouldn't have watched this on Tubi, if I would have seen it on, like, a different service, I would have never assumed it was a Tubi original, because it just felt, like, more put together. It is, like, lower budget. Like, you know, I guess you could say the cinematography, the level of those kind of resources, yeah, it looks somewhere along those lines. Although, I would say out of all of them I've seen, it is one of the better-looking films. But I just felt like the characters, the story, the writing, and the conclusion, like, how everything wraps up, Tubi, keep hiring this team, because this just feels like a level above of what I've seen mostly from Tubi, as far as, like, their original stuff. And I think, you know, this setup always works, because it's such an easy thing to do. Like, you're road tripping, you pick up a hitchhiker, like, that's kind of like a classic setup. I mean, all the way back to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, right? And I felt like this one, it just kept me engaged the whole time. Funny enough, I actually threw this one on as kind of like a background thing for work, because it's kind of, with me, it's kind of tricky what I will watch during while I'm working that I can't put 100% attention on. I usually, it's never going to be something I need to do for a show. It's never going to be like a first time watch that I'm, like, super interested in seeing or know something about going ahead. I just, like, opened the Tubi app and I was like, all right, I need something just to have ambient sound. And it caught enough of my attention early on that I was like, yeah, this is actually kind of interesting. I'm going to pause.
So you watched that found footage movie with Bubba Gump in it too?
No, but I'm curious to hear about that.
Hollow Ground, I think it's called, with Lance Henriksen too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Bubba Gump.
Is it new?
It's old.
Okay, because I was going to say Lance Henriksen's up there now. I don't know
that movie. I kind of like Hollow Ground.
No, I get too, yeah. It was like, it was Bubba. I was just weird. It was like, Bubba!
But yeah, it seems like Low Life is getting pretty, like, positive reaction from people. Like, I haven't heard anyone say they didn't like it so far, so it could just be a case of one of those little hidden gems that somehow they pulled off, that they did everything right to make a pretty entertaining, like, little indie movie. So yeah, it is. I mean, for people who hate commercials, yeah, unfortunately right now Tubi is where it is streaming, so you're going to have to deal with that. But otherwise, I give it a high recommend. So, back to Venom for number three.
Fuck commercials. Anyway, I can't do commercials. I would literally rather pay the $3.99 and rent it on Amazon. I don't care. I don't mind supporting the genre, and I really fucking hate commercials. And it seems like Tubi just picks the worst fucking time to stick a commercial in there sometimes. You know, rather than picking a natural point where there's like a mood change or like a tonal change or something, but it's like, nah, they'll just throw it right in the middle of the action sometimes. Not always, but sometimes. So, yeah. So, basically, fuck commercials. Anyway, for my third movie of what we've been watching, I'm going to go ahead and bring in a part three. And plus, Derek just brought in a part three for one of his movies, too. So, why not? This is another Asian horror film. This one was actually released Christmas Day in the States. So Christmas Day of 2023, which Bridge in Curse? My opinion, what's that?
Is it Bridge Curse 3?
Well, you know the movie. You just got the title wrong. The Rope Curse 3.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. The Bridge Curse is a different movie, I think. Yeah, I think there is a Bridge Curse series. Yeah. But yeah, Rope Curse. I mean, what can I say about this movie? This was a fun movie about a family of exorcists, but they're like working in modern times. So like the main character in the movie is like an aspiring parkour influencer. Like literally, he's an online influencer that does parkour. He doesn't really want anything to do with his family's, you know, exorcism, actions or their business. It's basically the family business. But obviously, he ends up getting roped in, no pun intended. He ends up getting roped into the family business, and it's actually – I really, really like this movie. This movie's gorgeous. Like, all three of the Rope Curse movies are beautiful films. They're beautifully shot, really nice, vibrant colors, really good dark blacks for the really, you know, dark scenes. I mean, this is a really well-made series. The third one, you know, maybe not as good as the first two, because obviously with the first movie, that's where you're learning about it, learning about what it is that these people do, learning about the rope curse itself, blah, blah, blah. Then the second one expands on that story. This one basically takes place almost an entire generation, I think, after the first one, because I think this woman is like the daughter or granddaughter of the exorcist from the original movie, if I remember correctly. Mind you, it's been years since I watched the first couple, and I didn't watch them in a row by any stretch. So this is definitely an example of where scenes might start to kind of meld together. I might confuse scenes from part two into part three. But for whatever it's worth, I like these movies. Again, they're not exceptional necessarily, but they do... The filmmaking aspects are undeniable. They're beautiful-looking films, like I said, well-performed, well-directed, well-edited. It's really a matter of the story. Again, just like with Indigo, the story is not nearly as robust as I would like it to be. It still is more substantial than Indigo. Indigo is a very simple story. At least Rope Curse gets into, you know, some idiosyncrasies and, like, you know, different aspects of it. It doesn't come off as basic, basically. So, yeah, if you know anything about the Rope Curse, if you've seen any of the movies before, 3 is now available. To my knowledge, 4 is being made, and this is a series that seems like it's going to continue. All 3 of these are available on Netflix, so if you want to go ahead and check these out. Once again, slightly longer runtime, just over an hour and 50 minutes, 5-0. So again, long runtime on an Asian film. The pacing may not be exactly where you want it to be, but because of the setting and just how well this movie was shot, I really, really enjoyed it. So I would actually give this one a higher recommend than even Indigo. So, and I don't think you necessarily need to have seen the first two. It does help a lot, especially because in the Rope Curse 3, there's actually scenes that are flashbacks to the original movie. Those scenes may be a little confusing to first-time viewers. So I don't know that it's – like I said, it's not necessarily essential that you watch the first two, but I would still recommend it because all three movies are really good. They're watchable. Like I said, a little bit longer with slower pacing, but still they do still get a high recommend from me. So, yeah, Rope Curse 3, pretty damn cool. Check it out.
Yeah.
I had seen that. Is it Netflix, you said?
Yeah, all three of them are on Netflix.
Okay, good. I'm glad all three, because I remember the third one coming across, like, I think my what is it, new releases section, and it looked interesting, but I hadn't seen the first two, so I was like, maybe I should hold off until I see them.
Yeah.
All three are on there right then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, not ultra vital that you watch the first two, but I would still recommend it. Just so that you get full clarity of the story as you go along. Yeah. So yeah,
it's not like the I3 where it's a totally different story. There's some continuity.
It ain't Halloween 3, definitely.
Oh, imagine.
Season of the Rope Curse. And that's it for me.
All right, Derek, what you got?
I got a book, because I've been reading, because I did watch some movies, but, you know, I want to talk about a book for my last one, because I want to give this book some credit, because it's, you know, we don't really bring up books here, because not my fault, you know, you guys, you're like, fuck reading, but it's all good. But anyways,
I can't read.
It's all good. I know. But it's called The Originals Return, and it's by David Watkins, and it's, if you know anything about the title, The Originals, it's a werewolf novel. So I'm only halfway through this right now. I'm like halfway through the book itself, so I haven't really finished it, so I'll give an update probably next show. By that time, I should be done with it. You know, the cool thing about a book compared to a movie is they always have, and actually listen to a few writers on like a certain podcast, it's actually true. You get an unlimited budget of special effects, which is cool. But you could,
damn
like,
right. The movie, you know, in your head is always better than the movie that ends up getting made.
You know, exactly. You know, and you know, this book gets very gory in some aspects. With like describing like the kill scenes and shit of the werewolf, and the werewolf like transformation scenes seem cool, because you know they actually, the reactions of certain other characters in those scenes were pretty cool, because it's pretty much about this guy named Jake who ends up falling into like this hole, and he gets like stabbed with something, and pretty much he changes. Yeah, it's kind of like an interesting aspect of that story. And it also has like this subplot where this team of military fucking commandos are actually hired in order to go to this small town where this guy lives and watch him for certain reasons, wink, wink. And then that's when all hell fucking breaks loose. And yeah, it's pretty fucking cool because, you know, some other reveals have happened within it, which I found cool. Like, there's more than one werewolf, which I found really cool. You know, it's kind of like a pack novel, which I find interesting in that aspect, too. So, yeah, it's cool. You know, a werewolf, anything, I love. You know, I wish there was a lot better some werewolf movies out there than the ones we get now usually kind of suck in that aspect, which I wish, you know, it's cool to get some more in that genre of movie, folklore in that sense, where you get like these other werewolf stories too. Like I've actually like binged a few like werewolf novels. Like My Pet Werewolf was another one that was pretty good that I just read recently. But overall, if you like reading, Originals Return so far, good book so far. And I just decided to talk about that one because I watched the movie Night Swim. And oh my God. Oh. Wow. Fucking Wyatt Russell, you need money that day.
You made it through the whole movie without falling asleep? I'm shocked.
Well, the only good part of that movie was the fucking Gollum ghost that looked like Gollum before he became CGI. You know what I'm talking about? That's what it looked like. That was the only good part of the movie. But other than that,
honestly, the 5 minute short is better than the entire movie. For those who don't know, Night Swim was actually based on a short, I believe from 2021. I want to say, But it's on YouTube, so just look up Night Swim Short. It's not long. It's literally like 4 to 6 minutes long, and it's better than anything in the movie. So there you go.
It's based on my life.
Yeah, Night Swim, not very good. If you want to know how not good we found it, we did the Fresh Cuts episode on it, and that's out there. So.
Yeah.
All right, so for my third and final What We Watched pick, this is probably my favorite of the three, and this is currently on Netflix. It's out of the country of Mexico, I believe, and it is called Disappear Completely, and the kind of synopsis of this, or the setup at least, is our main character is a crime scene photographer, but what you realize quickly, he's not like an official worker for like the coroner or like the police department. No, he's like someone that shows up to crime scenes and takes pictures to sell to like tabloid magazines and stuff, or you know, niche publications. So basically that's like our setup, and as you would guess, he shows up somewhere where maybe or perhaps he takes a photo of something that someone or something doesn't want people to see. And the movie kind of goes from there with our character dealing with the repercussions of doing that. And, you know, the title of the movie could have you guessing, like, what's at stake with our main character, what kind of could be happening to him. The movie poster kind of gives more clues. Like, I wouldn't even call it like a spoiler or a big secret, but I'm mostly keeping it vague for Venom's benefit, because I know you like to be as blind
this
as possible.
This is on Netflix?
So. Yes, it's currently on Netflix under the, I believe it's under the American translation name.
Disappear completely.
Like, if you Google the movie, there are posters with like the actual Spanish.
Ooh, I like that
title. Oh yeah, it's a cool ass poster, and I like the synopsis or the setup too. I like where it goes. Now it is kind of a slow burn. Like I will say, for like horror absolutists, I don't even want to say elitist, but like for people who are like, I need this amount of horror in it before I will call it a horror movie. It really is kind of like a dark crime thriller with horror elements, but I don't care. I'll still put that in the horror umbrella. And I thought there was enough. Once you realize like what's going on and like how it ties in, I think it's a horror movie, and it is one of the better movies I think I've actually seen this year. And I think this goes back to the thing where I think it's listed as a 2023 because it probably came out in Mexico last year, but I had never even heard of it or seen anything about it until it was on my Netflix feed. So
it actually is a 2024 movie, even in Mexico.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah,
in that case,
it's literally brand new. Yep.
Nice. All right. Well, then, yeah, especially for you, Venom, I would recommend it because, you know, our list considerations and all that.
I got something to do tonight.
I might watch this too, actually. It sounds better than Night of the Icewind.
Yeah, I would say so. But, yeah, for your guys' benefit, I won't say much more about it, but I would say I really enjoyed it. I mean, this is what I love about VOD and streaming services, is the potential that movies like that kind of hit, where I literally knew nothing about it, and I was just like, I think I saw the title and I saw the box art on my feed, and I know I added it to my queue, and my watch list gets so big, and I can't remember if I looked up like reviews or at least one review just to see or not, but I ended up watching it, and I was like, damn, this is pretty good. I haven't seen anyone talk about it. I would imagine, like, you know, the further we get into the year when people start exploring around Netflix and stuff, it'll get talked about more eventually, but I just haven't seen many people say anything yet. So I highly recommend it, though, so check that out. And that's my last one. I watched a shitty one called Emily about a deranged babysitter that's, like, so not deranged. It was like so bland and vanilla. It was
She makes the kids watch the parent sex tape and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that movie.
Yeah, like I expected like the babysitter to be a lot more
sinister.
It,
like
it just never went anywhere.
Kidnap fucking story. It's fucking bullshit, that movie.
Yeah, I was so glad I had like another movie to talk about because originally that was going to be one of my three. And I was like, man, there's not much to say about that. And then I looked back at my notes. I was like, oh, I actually have three other ones. So good.
Yeah, there's a few others I haven't watched yet. I rented fucking Bean to Death. And I was going to watch that. It's like the Australian fucked up movie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I still have to watch that where the guy just gets his eyes gouged out and shit. And, you know, but other than that, yeah, I haven't watched a lot. I haven't had time, you know.
Yeah, I'm getting back into that situation. I like my, especially on Netflix, my queue is growing, and I just gotta sit down and I gotta stop doing other things and just be like, let me watch it. Or you know, I get off work with like so many nights. I clock out of work with like, okay, tonight if I just start watching movies like right after work, but then I always end up doing something else for a few hours, and the next thing you know, it's like, damn, I gotta. Can I fit in a movie tonight? But, yeah, that's all I got for the what we watched. I don't know. Is there anything else you guys wanted to mention before we move on? Watch, played, read, anything?
Nothing else comes to mind, man.
Okay.
Hey, man. Yeah, that's about it.
Someone said that AMC networks were adding ad-supported tiers to their plan. I don't know if that's including Shudder or if they're just talking AMC Plus, because I haven't gotten any emails or anything from Shudder about it. And I can't imagine, like, I'm like, well, Shudder, it's only $6.99, I think, a month now. So I'm like, I don't know. I'm just like,
oh, yeah, that's another thing I got.
My bigger concern is that they're going to raise the price of the regular commercial-free account and then do a discounted ad-supported account.
Yeah,
my fucking fear.
I would be more worried about that if they said, like, hey,
oh, they pull a fucking AMC bullshit?
Yeah, or didn't Amazon do that too?
Yeah, that's what I meant, Amazon. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Fucking yeah. $5 extra I'm going to pay now just to have fucking no commercials. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah,
that's common for most of the apps now. I mean, Paramount Plus, I have to pay an extra $5 for commercial free. Hulu, same thing. Well, Hulu, it's actually more than $5 for a commercial free account. But yeah, like I said, as I mentioned earlier, I hate commercials, so I always get the commercial free accounts. I'll pay the extra money. I don't care.
Yeah, I pay like $20 for like the fucking Disney Plus, Hulu, fucking commercial free.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, like, you could almost, like, if you want to be, like, conspiratorial about it, you can say, okay, Shudder just unveiled, like, the Last Drive-In's new format, which extends it out. So they were looking at subscriptions, like, hey, I know people resubscribe and then cancel according to when the last drive-in is. Well, let's extend that out, then add this new tier that's more expensive, and see how that goes. So hopefully it's all a coincidence and unrelated, but I wouldn't put it past like marketing to say, okay, first you convince people to keep their subscription longer, and then you hit them with the price hike. But we'll see.
Fucking Shudder.
That was a news item that came off the top of my head. Because honestly, I don't really have anything written down, which is funny because honestly, this is our first episode of the main show that we haven't postponed past like the initial time we planned to do it. So like,
imagine
like the past like three episodes, I would keep adding new notes to my notes like every couple of weeks because I had more time to like look up stuff. But this time it's like, okay, are we all good on this day? Yep, and we're actually doing it. So like, I never really had time to sit down and be like, all right, let me go hunt for like news items. I don't know, but do you guys have anything in the genre that's going
on? Oh yeah, I've got one. Okay, good. I've got one big one that's pissing me off to no end.
All right, let's hear it.
As many of you may know, this being 2024, this is the 25th anniversary of the Blair Witch Project, and just this week, Jason Blum announced that Blumhouse will be doing a fucking remake of the Blair Witch Project with Eduardo Sanchez's blessing. I am not fucking happy about this at all. What the fuck are you going to add to this? I mean, I understand a lot of people don't like the Blair Witch Project. Like, that's fine. If you're not into found footage, if the shaky camera makes you sick, or you just don't like the filming style, fine. No big deal. But the Blair Witch Project literally put found footage on the map. Yes, I understand that stuff like Cannibal Holocaust and movies like that, The Last Broadcast, that they all existed long before the Blair Witch Project. But the Blair Witch Project put this subgenre on the map. Potentially one of my favorite subgenres of horror is found footage. And to hear that Blumhouse, of all fucking people, not A24, not Neon, hell, I'll even take Necrostorm. But no, fucking Blumhouse is going to remake one of my favorite fucking movies of all time. And they already fucking destroyed the legacy of The Exorcist. So let's try to destroy the legacy of another fucking horror franchise. You know, I supported Blumhouse so much when they first came out. And now it's just a shit factory. It's a jump scare factory, or they're doing remakes. It's like there's not an original idea left at Blumhouse. And it's fucking annoying.
It feels like assembly line horror.
They made They made Night Swim mic drop.
Yeah, exactly. That's an original movie for them. Yay. Sorry. Yeah, Blumhouse, they've lost their way. I'm not going to say that Blumhouse was ever like a cream of the crop horror studio by any stretch. But they did some good stuff early on, obviously.
You know,
I mean, Jason Blum and James Wan together did some great, great stuff. So, you know, the fact that I did forget to mention, too, that James Wan is attached to direct the Blair Witch remake. So that could be good. That could be bad.
James Wan also produced Night Swim.
Yeah, exactly. And that the thing about the Blair Witch Project, though, is that it was the fact that there was no real script, that they basically just gave the actors some very basic instructions, like get into an argument about something or, you know, split up at this point. Like, there was no fucking script. It was just, you know, scene by scene being shot and everything else. And now they're going to get a big studio like Blumhouse. You know they're going to write a fucking script for it, and you know it's going to fucking suck.
Yeah.
And I'm just disgusted with this. I genuinely am. Jason Blum, if you're listening, fuck you. Like, literally, get an original fucking idea. Find a director and a writer who has an original fucking idea and give them a job. All right? Fuck just all these people that you've been working with lately fucking up all these great franchises. And I love Lee Whannell. Up until like 5 years ago, I was a huge fan of Lee Whannell. And then he comes in and ruins the fucking Exorcist. Sorry, folks. I'm going off on a tangent.
Wasn't that David Gordon Green?
Oh, you're right. You're absolutely right. It was David Gordon Green.
We still love you, Lee.
Yeah, we still like you, I guess. But anyway, like I said, Blumhouse, I have no faith in Blumhouse left. I have zero faith in Blumhouse. They are going to have to put out a fucking When Evil Lurks quality movie to win me back, because they have completely lost me. Obviously, because of my podcasting and because of Fresh Cuts, I'm going to have to watch every new fucking piece of garbage Blumhouse movie that comes out, including the Blair Witch Project, which I flat out want to boycott. Like, I don't even want to see it, but I already know Mike's going to make me see it when it hits theaters. So, you know, whatever. But I'm sorry. Jason Blum, what the fuck? What the fuck happened to you?
Did
success get to your head? Is it that you're rich now and you don't have that desire to make cool original shit anymore? Like, what the fuck happened to Jason Blum? Jason Blum is a perfect example of you either die the hero or you live long enough to become the villain. Because, my friends, Jason Blum is a villain of horror. I don't care.
I think, unfortunately, he's just figured out that magic formula of how to turn a profit with minimal effort, and they're not going to deviate off it until enough people become uninterested in a movie based off the name because a movie 30 years ago was really good.
Yeah.
They're going to keep doing it. That's the problem. Is I don't want to say horror fans are unique in this way, because it probably goes across all genres, but when there's a movie that's just really good, really reputation, and it goes across generations, all you have to do is like put out a new movie with the same title, and people just go see it no matter what. It's just one of the, I don't want to call it unfortunate, because once in a while they do hit and there's like, okay, that was like worth it. But most of the time, no. And like I said, that doesn't mean every single one's terrible, but if you're not striving to make it great, why remake it in the first place? And the problem with Blair Witch, it almost has its own special status, because I feel, or I've always felt with the Blair Witch project, it's just as much a product of its time as it is like whatever you think about the movie itself. It came out in like the early internet era, where so many people didn't understand that, like, hey, just because it's on the internet, like, just because you're seeing ads or spooky things about it on the internet, it doesn't make it real. But back then, a lot of people didn't understand.
They thought it was real. They had a fucking fake fucking documentary on sci-fi.
Yeah, to me, the only justification, if you were trying to remake this, you would have to come up with some idea where in 2020, is it supposed to release in next year, I think, film this year?
I'm not sure, yeah.
Well, let's just say this era. You would have to come up with some justification in this era to recreate that suspension of disbelief, or do something totally different that would justify making a new version, which I have a hard time. To me, my guess is they're just going to remake the same damn movie, but it's going to have zero of the same effect, because we live in a different world where people are not going to go into it with the is it or isn't it, like, non-understanding anymore. You can't replicate that atmosphere going into it. I remember standing in line for it and people talking about it, and like, it was all rumor, like, oh, this, and you're not going to have that anymore. So it's like, I don't understand, other than to say, hey, we can make a cheap movie for a few million bucks and make a lot of money. Like, business wise, I can see, because Blumhouse certainly has a business model.
Yeah, hell,
that
even
earns
fucking,
them a profit. That's hell, about it.
But that's the thing. Blumhouse used to be known as that company that made these low-budget movies that would end up making $40, $50 million in the box office. That's what Blumhouse was about. But then once they abandoned that formula, and not to say that they've abandoned it completely, but they've embraced remakes and readaptations and sequels and prequels and things like that, and it's like, that's where I feel they lost their way. Yes, I understand that these movies make money. They're going to have big opening weekends, but doesn't art matter anymore? Like, wouldn't Jason Blum, yes, I understand he's a rich man. He's made himself rich by putting out all these movies. His same formula of a cheap horror movie that makes a lot of money is making him a billionaire. That's fine. But at the end of the day, doesn't art mean anything? Doesn't the quality of the film mean anything? And yes, I also understand that sometimes high-quality films don't make as much money. I understand that When Evil Lurks, which was most of our number one movies of last year, made a fraction of, you know, something like whatever Blumhouse random jump scare factory that they put out last year.
Hell.
But it's like, why doesn't art matter anymore? That's what bothers me. Why is it all – I understand that business is always about the dollar. Always, always, always. I understand that. But you can still make money and put out viable art, not garbage. Especially because in the second market, it's not going to make you any money. Like, do you honestly think that the Night Swim Blu-ray is selling? So what the fuck was the point of making a shitty movie that had a good opening weekend and now no one cares about it? We're literally sitting here making fun of it.
It feels like Blumhouse is definitely
it's actually one of the things I wanted to bring up, because I was doing some research on that movie too, and like, it was made for $15 million and it made $54 million in the fucking box office. And so that's fucking crazy in its own right, because there's people that do go see these shitty fucking movies.
So yeah, most of them are horror podcasters.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So
because they're simplistic, easy, digestible for the masses. And that's not always – and don't get me wrong, that's not always a bad thing. Like, there's plenty of good horror movies where it's a very simple plot, little to no surprises, and it's just well done. So those movies do exist, but to Venom's point, like, Blumhouse is basically like, let's do that, but make it something that already exists too. It's like, no, exactly. Stop it.
Sorry, you know, like, Jason Blum, but I don't like you very much. Maybe he'll hear this and reach out to me. And then I'll ask him what's the next horror franchise he's going to destroy.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Stop it. Anyway, back to the news. The only other thing that I wanted to mention was Late Night with the Devil, of course, is now available on Shudder. If you didn't see it in theaters, get off your ass and go see it on Shudder. It is probably one of the best horror movie of the year. On top of the fact, if you don't have Shudder or don't have access to a Shudder account, you can buy the movie for $14.99. Folks, I'm talking about potentially the best horror movie of 2024 you can buy right now for $14.99. So there's no excuse not to see this movie. You've got Shudder, and you've got a cheap sale price. So get out there and check it out if you haven't already.
Venom, were you able to get out to the theater to see Arcadia?
I did not, no, because of everything I had going on this weekend. I didn't make it.
Yeah, me either. It was only playing here, I think, for one weekend. Otherwise, I probably would have tried to go see it after I saw Abigail, because it was another Saturday where I kind of had the day to myself. So I definitely would have double featured it, but it was only playing last weekend, so unfortunately I wasn't.
It's still playing out here, but I can't imagine I'm going to get more than a second week. So
who produced Abigail?
I don't know.
I'm not curious.
That's a good question.
We'll tell you on tomorrow's show.
Okay.
Okay, so I guess if that's all we got for the news,
let's talk about gore.
Gore and gore and more gore.
Yes, glorious, glorious gore.
A lot of faces exploding in these two movies.
All right,
it was Venom's pick. So Venom, tell everyone what you picked before we take our break.
All right, before I tell you what I picked, I just wanted to let you know that obviously we talked about 2024 earlier and what I guess was an early burning question segment for the show. We talked about the quality of 2024. I have been very unhappy with the level of gore that we've been getting out of horror films over the last few years. I mean, The Sadness in 2022 was a standout. When Evil Lurks last year maybe wasn't the goriest film, but it was still very disturbing with some of its imagery. So I'm just kind of sick of pussyfooting around. So I just decided I'm going to bring two of the goriest fucking films that I can think of to this week's episode. Now, I also wanted to make sure that they were watchable movies. Like, trust me, we're not going to talk about August Underground on this show ever, I assure you, because I can't even fucking watch those movies. Not because of the gore, because of the quality of the film. The films are garbage. But the movies that we brought today, like I said, are movies that I've been familiar with for years. They are two favorites in the extreme gore genre for me, and they are, of course, the first movie is the obvious choice. Obviously, we're looking at 2008's Tokyo Gore Police. I mean, gore is in the title, so how would I not look at it? And then the one that's maybe not as obvious, it's a movie that I discovered a few years ago on my own, just kind of checking out NecroStorm's website and looking at some of the DVDs that they had available. More than a few years, actually. Probably like 5 or 6. But this movie was one that they actually had on sale. It was $9.99 on DVD. I had never heard about it before I read the blurb about it. But when I read the blurb on the website, I literally sprung an erection that moment. So I fucking ordered it. And to this day, this movie is one of my favorite extreme gore films ever. This one is coming out of Italy, and this is 2011's Adam Chaplin. And like I said, this is probably a movie that a lot of you have either never heard of or never seen. So we're definitely going to be taking
Mobster Jason.
Oh, yeah. We're going to take a deep and very gory dive into Adam Chaplin and Tokyo Gore Police when we get back.
Bloody rain blood.
Sounds deliciously bloody. All right. Cool. So we'll be back with Venom's double feature after this break.
Yum, yum. It's time for a tasty and refreshing snack.
Thank you.
We promise to satisfy your hunger, your thirst, your sweet tooth. So visit our refreshment center now. Let's go! And now, on with the show.
All right, folks, we are back and we are ready for our feature reviews of the episode. Like I said, we're bringing the gore, we're bringing the blood, we are bringing the arterial spray. Because let me tell you, arterial spray is one of my favorite things in these extreme gore horror movies. I know it's fake as shit, but god damn it, when somebody gets a limb cut off and it literally sprays blood about 40 feet away from them, I'm a happy boy. So let's start with our first movie. Like I said, coming to us from 2007 in Japan, 2008 in the States. It is Tokyo Gore Police. This movie is an hour and 50 minutes, a little bit of a longer one, but considering the content, I don't mind at all. Our synopsis is as follows. In future Tokyo, a young woman in the privatized police force tracks down her father's killer while battling against mutant rebels known as engineers.
Yeah. So
I'm actually, rather than handing this off, I'm actually going to start with this one because god damn, do I love this and our second movie of the day as well. This movie was the first Tokyo Extreme movie I had ever seen. I know stuff like Machine Girl and Ichi the Killer came before this, but Tokyo Gore Police was the first one that I had ever seen out of Japan, you know, out of Tokyo Extreme, the studio, Tokyo Extreme. So after seeing this, I was astounded by how nice this movie looks, because before this movie, if you wanted to watch really hardcore blood and gore, you had to kind of give up a little bit of film quality. Stuff like August Underground or the Olaf Eitenbach movies out of Germany, like The Burning Moon and stuff like that. It's like they were gory as hell, but the film quality wasn't always there. So when I first saw Tokyo Gore Police, that's what struck me, is that this looks like a big budget movie shot on nice cameras. It's still shot on digital video. It's not film, but at least it's really nice looking digital video. You know what I mean? So that was always the first thing that struck me. And then after this was when I started to seek out all of the extreme Tokyo stuff that I could find, Machine Girl and everything else that I talked about, plus, you know, everything that's come out since then, because now I'm just an absolute hardcore viewer of this stuff. So, yeah, Tokyo Gore Police. Basically, this is a movie of who's the real monster. Is it the police or is it the engineers? And the engineers in this movie are basically people that have been given a tumor that's shaped like a key. And when they have that tumor in their body, they have, you know, more power, more abilities, but the main thing is that when they lose a limb, that limb is replaced with a deadly weapon. So, I mean, we see stuff like a guy getting his penis cut off, and then it gets replaced with like a shotgun. Literally, he's got like a penis shotgun.
Go for that one first.
Yeah, and then the very first one in the movie, an engineer is wielding a chainsaw, and then he gets his arm cut off, and his arm grows back as a fucking chainsaw. So just really, really cool. I mean, the storytelling here.
You know who that was?
Oh, the first guy? He did look familiar. I couldn't name him.
That's actually we actually talked about him on one of your actual other picks, Versus. That's Taxiguchi.
Yes, okay. I knew he looked familiar. Yeah. And obviously our main star here, Ruka, is famously from Audition. I absolutely fell in love with this actress. Oh, I fell in love with her in Audition. Even though she's an absolute psycho bitch, I had a thing for Asian women at the time, and she was just absolutely adorable.
I love her.
Yeah, and she still is. She's still a beautiful lady. So,
yes,
yeah, when I saw her and the instant facial recognition instantly, you know, made me happy that this is the girl from Audition, the psycho from Audition. But like I said, we've got these engineers who can mutate their bodies up against, as I mentioned in the synopsis, a privatized police force. So the police force has been turned into a corporation owned
OCP.
By a private. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There you go. RoboCop vibes. And basically these cops, I mean, they're barely cops. It's basically martial law because they can basically do what they want. The movie starts out, you know, real simple with them just stopping crimes. But then literally by the third act, they're just going out killing anybody, like any innocent person who's on the street. And not just killing, my friends. I'm talking drawn and quartered, dismembered, decapitated. I mean, any Fisher. Atrocity you could think of. Tits getting cut off. I mean, my God. So, yeah, like I said, the basic story is there, and obviously it comes down to this big battle at the end between Ruka and, well, I won't say who her big battle is against because it's actually a little bit of a surprise. I was expecting the final battle to be between Ruka and the original engineer, but G-Man. It ends up being Ruka and someone else. But I think they were saving that for a sequel because if you watch the film, there is actually text at the end of it that says the engineers will be back in, you know, like Tokyo Gore Police 2 or something, a film that we never got. Hopefully it's not completely off the table because I would absolutely welcome a Tokyo Gore Police sequel, but enough about me fangirling over Tokyo Gore Police. Let's go ahead and bring in Derek. And Derek, give me some general thoughts on Tokyo Gore Police.
Well, the thing that I always was drawn by Tokyo Gore Police is I knew its director before because he's a special effects artist, Yoshiro Nishimura, who... He does. If you name like a fucking Asian horror movie, there's pretty much a fucked up one with like gore and shit in it. It's a pretty good guess that he probably did the effects for. Like I can name a few of them that he did the special effects for. Like he's worked a lot with like Noboru Oguchi, like all his movies like Robo Geisha and like Zombie Ass and Machine Girl. He did the effects for Machine Girl, so that makes sense. He also worked with Sane Sono, who actually has a cameo in this movie as well. Like Cold Fish, he did the effects for. A few Love Exposure, that movie Tag.
Yeah,
he did the effects. And, any, like, fucked up Asian movie that from this, like, time period, he probably did the effects for, pretty much. You know, and that shows. And, yeah, I always liked that aspect, and, you know, growing up with it, like, I seen this movie back in the day, and I was like, okay, that's pretty fucking awesome, but then I learned about it, and actually, this is kind of a remake of an earlier short film that he did called Automatic Extension, which actually, that movie just finally got a Blu-ray release recently, too, from another company, and, it's pretty much like a 54-minute version of this movie, just a kind of like very like less extreme in the sense where, you know, you're not gonna see any gator crotch women in it and shit like that. It's a very basic story about like this guy that's getting fallen by like the main engineer, and he becomes one and he fights against the oppression of the police force near the end of the movie. So it kind of has like this core setup of the story, like, you know, like the beginning, middle, and end of this movie, but very shorter, you know what I mean? And yeah, you know, and the aspects of this movie that I love, like going into it, is like it's very like Western based, this movie, because I actually watched the dub version of this. The dub of this movie is fucking amazing. It's so good. Like, you know, that like that speaker lady,
the dispatcher, yes.
Yeah. Oh, her fucking dub voice is so, like, you like, it's the same way with, like, Def Kappa's dub. You know, it's kind of in on the joke. Because right. I think the directors were actually involved in, like, the dubbing process, too. Because, you know, this movie doesn't even start with, like, Japanese subtitles. It's all English, like, lettering and shit. So, you know, like, they're trying to sell this hard to America in a weird way, even though it's fucking weird. Like, and, man, when we get to that brothel scene, I'm like, I need this man to direct, like, a fucked up Star Wars brothel scene.
Awesome.
You know what I mean? I need to see that, and I need this man to make it. You know, because it's very George Lucas. Like, you're, like, walking into this place, and you're seeing, like, all these weird looking, like, that weird thing that was showing off these girls.
Brothel, what the fuck
was that? You know, like... you know, and the snail girl and then the gator girl, which we'll talk about probably more later. But, you know, and it, the thing I also love, it's very, like, Paul Verhoeven-based because it has, like, infomercials and commercials in it, like, RoboCop / Starship Troopers based and, like, the propaganda, even, like, the propaganda thing videos of, like, the police force feel very Starship Troopers. You know, in that aspect. And, you know, I could respect that movie for that because I love Paul Verhoeven as a director. Even Showgirls, I know it's not his greatest movie, but you know, it's definitely his movie, you know, you know, in that aspect. But yeah, I love Tokyo Gore Police. I always did. It's a movie that, you know, you have to watch it a few, like the characters are so memorable. Like you get this guy that I nicknamed as Mohawk Eye Patch Hunchback. And that's like the perfect name. Like he doesn't even have like a real name in the movie. That's what I just called.
I called him Q because he reminded me of like the weapons maker in the Bond movies. So I just called him Q.
And he had like a chainsaw hand, and he had like a big gun hand. This is very cartoony. This movie. This is you know.
Both of these movies that we're talking about are basically live-action cartoons. I mean, some of the things that happen in these movies are so over-the-top ridiculous that they're almost funny.
And then we get the other most memorable character, Nubby. which is the most fucked-up sub-character. And it's like, the gimp from Pulp Fiction? Let's make that more fucked up.
Yeah. Yes, this movie introduces us to quadriplegic blowjobs. So there's that.
Yes. Yes, and samurai sword legs and machine gun legs, which is the best.
I would have definitely loved to have seen some backstory on that character. I mean, obviously, we got what we needed to. It's not like we needed the backstory, but I would have loved to have seen a little bit more about her.
Yeah, like this whole, like, even though, like, the bad guy, the main, like, the real bad guy of this movie, like you knew there's something up with this guy the first time you see him.
He just
has, like, this gimp thing with Nubs walking with a chain. Like, you know, like this is not normal. Even, like, the girl, like, the main character is like, yeah, fuck this, because she's a cutter. This movie's very, like, you know, it talks about, like, the suicide amount in Japan with, like, the suicide, like, propaganda videos. Like, cutters! Like,
oh, right, the wrist cutter G. Wrist cutter, actually advertising a razor specifically for suicide. That's fucking Japan, my friends.
Yeah, it's very, like, it's something like Paul Verhoeven would put in if he directed it, you know what I mean?
So good.
Yeah, but yeah, Tokyo Gore Police, thumbs up for me, I love it.
What's kind of funny, though, is that they'll have the commercial for the wrist cutter G, which almost sounds like they kind of support suicide, but then the very next commercial is harakiri is also suicide, don't do it. It's like, do you guys like suicide or not? You're contradicting yourself.
You know who that wasn't, you know, that was actually the director of Ju-on as the guy.
Oh shit. Oh nice.
Isaki Shimizumi Shimizu.
Oh shit, that's awesome. So cool.
Yeah,
all right, Mike's been quiet long enough. Mike, get in here, talk to us about some gore.
Oh, man, this is a fever dream of everything gore and then some.
The production company's fever dreams.
I feel like with Tokyo Gore Police, it's not just the gore. It's just the wild imagination with, like, where they go with the gore, what they set up for the gore gags to be, appendages on bodies, like, that you would never think to to imagine or conjure. I think the first time I saw this was right after I saw Machine Girl, and I thought, like, I remember at the end of Machine Girl, I was like, oh, well, this movie went pretty crazy, and then I started up Tokyo Gore Police, I was like, holy shit, this makes Machine Girl seem like a grounded movie, because this...
Zombie ass is like, hold my beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think this movie is, it's so wild and unpredictable, and as great as the gore is, it just feels like there's so many ideas and concepts going on besides just even the gore.
Can we talk about Bug Guy in the train?
Oh, Bug Guy.
I love the way they use the gore. It almost feels like it's like a virus onto the body, but then it gives you powers and like special abilities, and it's just, and when when body parts start flying and blood starts flowing, it's just nonstop entertainment. I mean, I've always held this one up as like a recommendation to people who are like looking for like that weird, crazy movie. It delivers in every way. I like the characters are sinister, and like I agree. So I chalk it up to the fact that like I grew up with my dad watching a lot of Shaw Brothers with English dubs, because that's what would be on TV. So I've grown to like that specific style when it comes to like Japanese movies that are like dubbed in English, because there's that certain style. It always shows back up with specifically Japanese movies. I just am so entertained by the style in which whoever recites the script lines and dialogue. It's actually like good. Now, obviously, I would always say like you should probably go for original language with subtitles at least, you know, one time, maybe the first time.
Yeah.
But after that, like I don't have an issue with the English dub on this one as much as I do in some movies, because I find it entertaining, like the over exaggeration.
Oh my God, let's go kill those engineers right now!
But they still do a good job of making the sinister characters sound sinister, evil, and all that. And I get a kick out of it. And I checked on Tubi; both versions are actually available, like on their own separate tracks. You can choose if you want original language.
Yeah, I almost never watch dubs.
It's weird how they do that, because some services, like, they'll put the movie on there, and then you can go to the setting once you start playing it, but Tubi actually will put, like, two completely separate versions on their own track. So
yeah, the aspect that I fucking, you know, with that all is, you know, because we talked about this when we did Def Kappa all those years ago, where... You know these people who are doing these dub tracks are in on it? Because there was one part where Jerry Herring, our old co-host of that show, was pissed that the only white dude in Def Kappa was still in Japanese. But I totally got the joke, what they were trying to do, and it fucking was the funniest thing ever. He was so pissed, like, why didn't they subtitle him? I'm like, Jerry, you don't get the joke, because they say that American actors in these movies are bad anyway. You know what I mean? So I found that funny.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You done, Mike?
I would just say, if you want a movie with carnage, like, this isn't, like, your run-of-the-mill, like, bad-looking, you know, CGI gore. Like, this stuff is craftsmanship on, obviously, on a macabre, like, level, like... You know what you're getting yourself into, because
there is some cartoony CGI near the end, especially when that guy is starting to fly with blood.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the blood propellers. Yeah.
I'm like, how is this guy still alive?
Blood propulsion. Yeah, that was. I mean, that's the thing though, is that you can kind of forgive that kind of stuff, because the entire movie is so over the top you're not rolling your eyes, you're laughing. You're like in on the joke. You're laughing with them, not at them. And it adds so much pleasure to the overall viewing experience. I can't put into words how much I adore this film. Yeah. This film really is a 2-hour Bugs Bunny cartoon. Just think of the most vile, bloody, gory Bugs Bunny versus Elmer Fudd cartoon that you could possibly think of in your head, and that's this movie. It's just cartoonish characters, over-the-top kills, over-the-top mutations. I mean, we haven't even gotten into all the mutations yet, and there's so many to talk about in this movie. There's just so much to love, and you know, and like I said, the fact that it doesn't look like August Underground, that it's actually filmed, like the filmmakers care about this movie, you know, they weren't just trying to make the goriest film that they could think of.
Like, they actually put some, they put a little bit of thought into the story. They put a little bit of thought into, like, the twist at the end when we find out, you know, who the real assassin was, blah, blah, blah. Did anybody else, the police, did anybody else think the police chief was the assassin on the first watch? Because they have the exact same eyes, the police chief and the assassin. I literally thought he was the assassin the first time I watched the movie. Yeah, obviously,
and I thought
to get to the end.
Mm-hmm. And I thought the first time I watched this that I didn't realize it was the dude's son that was the main engineer. I thought it was the actual same dude.
Right.
Because it's the same actor, so it's kind of weird.
Yeah. When you see him at the end with his head put back together, it definitely leaves you scratching your head a little bit.
Dude, Agent Morpheus was the MVP of this movie.
Oh, by far. And I mean, for somebody who comes off as a villain at first, I mean, whether he's the true villain or not is up to the viewer. You know, are the police the real bad guys? Are the engineers the real bad guy? It's really up to the viewer's opinion. But, just, you know, despite the fact that he's set up as the villain, he ends up being one of the more likable characters in the movie because he's speaking the truth. Like, everything that he's saying is, like, valid. The police, privatized police, you know, they don't have to answer to anybody. They can do whatever the fuck they want. They could literally make you disappear, and there's no trial, no arrest, no nothing. So it's like everything that I think his name was Mizaki, right? Was the original engineer? Yeah, so everything Mizaki was saying was valid. You know, it's all, like, I could see Ruka, you know, the expressions in her face basically saying, you know what, you're right. These police are shit, and we kind of have to rise up and deal with it. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, decent storytelling, good performances, great mutations. I mean, what is there not to love about this movie?
Okay,
I
what was your favorite?
My favorite mutation? Let's see. I guess technically
Switch
the GIMP with
Girl?
Her. I mean, because my favorite form is easily the GIMP with her sword limbs, but obviously we don't actually see that mutation, if it's even a mutation at all.
I think it's like just attachment.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, that they're just attached to her nubs there. So technically not a mutation, even though it is my favorite creature in the film. As far as my favorite mutation, I mean, what guy doesn't want a gun as a penis? our penis basically is a gun to an extent when you think about it. I mean, we could point it and make someone pregnant, you know?
It was aiming on its own and shit.
That's what I mean. Oh, my God, and it was prehensile. Yeah, he had a fucking prehensile automatic weapon for a penis. God damn it, this movie is amazing.
I really dug the schoolgirl switchblade girl.
Oh, Schoolgirl Switchblade was cool. Acid Spitter. The Acid Spitter. Is that her?
Yeah, it's the same girl. She shoots acid.
Okay, that's the Acid Spitter. Fuck, that kill was awesome. CG as hell, I know, fine, but goddamn, that kill was great. I mean, yeah, some of the kills in this movie are beyond ridiculous, like I said. And the commercials. Like I said, this movie is equal parts funny as it is, well, maybe not equal parts funny and gory, but I mean, it's these commercials that they put in here are fucking hysterical. The police public service announcements, as the movie gets deeper, the public service announcements get like more and more ridiculous, and you kind of shake your head at them more and more as the movie goes along, because obviously, as the movie goes along, the viewer is kind of meant to dislike this police department, this, you know, privatized police corps. And they kind of, by the second half of the movie, are the true villains of this movie, the police chief and the rest of the police. So, I mean, that's something that I always love when films do, when they take someone that's set up to be the villain, but then they end up being one of the more likable characters in the movie, in maybe not in a heroic sense, but at least in a logical sense. So, yeah. Love, love, love Mizaki. And for whatever it's worth, I want to see Mizaki again. I want to see Ruka. I want to see Mizaki. I fucking need a sequel to this movie badly.
Yeah, it seems like a movie you could do it for. I mean, it's funny. There's a lot of, like, Asian movies from that era, from, like, the first 10 years of the 2000s that there will always be rumors of a possible sequel, and it just never materialized. Although, there's so many movies that are, like, similar that, like, you could almost consider them, like, successors or, like, companion pieces. to them in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And what about the scene, all the scenes in the movie where they install the key? How fucking painful does that look?
Oh, it's very Cronenberg.
Oh, my God. Total body horror. Basically, for anyone who hasn't seen the movie, basically Mizaki, or the original engineer, he makes these tumors that are shaped like a key. And what he does is he basically just touches any part of your body with the tip of the key, and a keyhole appears in your flesh, literally. He inserts the key, turns it, and a part of your body fucking splits open. So for like Ruka, literally her arm was flayed. It literally split open lengthwise. And then he sticks the key in there, and the arm closes up again. But the better one was Penis Gun Guy, because his fucking head split open.
How is that guy still alive?
Exactly. How the fuck did he survive that? But yeah, once the tumor is in their body, that's it. They're an engineer, and they're not unstoppable, obviously, but almost unstoppable. Because I mean, imagine kind of like the Gimp character, but imagine if somebody actually cut off all four limbs and the head of an engineer and didn't hit the key. So literally they're going to regrow five fucking weapons, and they're going to be almost unstoppable, which maybe they were saving that for the sequel. I don't know, but that would have been awesome to see as well. But yeah, my friends, like I said, this movie, it's an absolute joy. It is so glorious in its gore, its comedy, its storytelling, its acting, good directing, good editing. The fucking police dispatcher is endlessly entertaining. Every scene that she's in is fucking hysterical.
Oh, I love her.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what else we could really say about it. This is something that needs to be experienced.
Obviously, my Facebook friend.
Hell yeah. I mean, if you can't handle the gore, then I understand not gravitating towards movies like this. But ultimately, this isn't a movie where the gore is really meant to be taken all that seriously, or to actually like kind of turn your stomach or whatever. Like I said, the aforementioned stuff like August Underground, Guinea Pig, you know, movies like that that are really just about shocking the audience. This good movie isn't necessarily – what's that? I'm sorry?
I said those ones are the date movies.
Exactly. Good date movies. But this one, like I said, it's not just about the gore, you know. It's great storytelling, great comedy, awesome PSAs throughout. I mean, there's a lot to love about this movie. So basically, if you can handle the gore, I would say this is a high recommend. Whether you watch the dubbed or the subbed version, because obviously Derek spoke about the some of the fun stuff with the dubbed version. So I mean, if that's your preference, do it. Obviously, I'm a subbed guy. I want to see everything in its original language. But maybe on Derek's recommendation, since I do own this Blu-ray, maybe I'll throw in the English dub just to see what he's talking about.
Yeah, just watch it like stoned, and just you'll see what I mean.
Awesome. All right, folks. Well, that's it for Tokyo Gore Police. Now we are going to move on to our second film of the day. Give me a second. I got to type this in. Edit this out, Mike. Sorry, I wasn't prepared.
Mobster Jason Voorhees.
All right.
Danny Roberts.
Okay, here we go. Here's your edit point, Mike. Okay, so our second movie of the episode is coming to us out of Italy. And my friends, if the last movie was an absolute joy, this is fucking heaven to me. Now, obviously, you know, this is Adam Chaplin coming to us from Italy, 2011. Our synopsis is as follows. His life was torn apart when his wife was murdered by mafia boss Denny. Filled with vengeance, Adam summoned a demon that endowed him with godlike strength so that he might survive his journey through Heaven's Valley. That's another great thing I like about this. The name of this city is Heaven's Valley. There's people being decimated left and fucking right, and it's called Heaven's Valley. Absolutely love it. Let's go ahead and bring Mike in first on this one. Mike, first time watch for you, and what did you think of Adam Chaplin?
Not a first time watch. Probably a second time. Like, I think I've only seen it the one initial time, which is based on me coming across a trailer, I think, like when it was in production or, you know, ready to come out. And it still took a few years for me, I think, to track it down from when I saw that trailer. Because to me, this is like the perfect example of a trailer basically tells you what you need to know. It doesn't necessarily spoil anything as far as story, and it doesn't give away like all the best gore gags, but it does enough to say, hey, we're going to tell you what type of movie this is, and you're either going to watch this trailer and want 90 minutes or, 80 minutes more, yeah, or you're going to run the other way and delete this from your brain. And I love it. The style, it's funny because, like, when our main character, after he becomes possessed and superpowered and all that, a lot of he almost reminds me of Kenshiro from Fist of the North Star with his punching, yes, and his crazy shit. I feel like this takes a lot of, like, different influences and puts it in here. And this one is probably, like, way lower, well, I think way lower budget, oh, yeah, than Tokyo Gore Police. Sometimes you're tricked into thinking that, and it's just how they are able to use, yeah, the budget, but just from the looks of it, it's lower budget. But I think it's just so out there and bizarre, and there is very few, I think, like, now that I'm thinking about it, is the wife the only, like, quote-unquote normal character? Because, like, every...
Oh, unmutated, you mean?
Unmutated, yeah.
Like Rat Jason Mewes?
Just like a regular-looking person, because I swear every other character in this movie, there's something going on with them. Like, obviously,
they're either addicted to heroin or they're mutated.
Yeah. It's probably, like, drugs. You know, the Denny probably filled the city up with drugs to keep everybody, you know.
Drugs.
Yeah, obviously, it's to varying degrees. Not everyone's on a 10 out of 10 on the scale, but, like, everyone's walking around with some type of mutation or addiction or worse going on. I remember when I initially watched, I was a little worried because I was like, sometimes these gore gag movies, they hook you in with the gore, but, like, they kind of run out of steam because there's a lack of story but characters. But I actually found, like, the writing and the dialogue, it's almost, like, comedic in, like, a sense, like, almost not on purpose. Like, it's almost, how can I put it? Like, almost dark in the way it makes you laugh, because it's, like, you're hearing, like, you know, your typical, like, mafia dialogue, but it's with these grotesque mutated characters, so it's like you're kind of laughing at it because the dialogue feels so familiar if you've watched, you know, like mafia movies. But then imagine like Goodfellas, but they were all like mutated ghouls delivering the lines.
The lead mobster looks like a Jason Voorhees from
Park. He looks like El Gigante from that Gigi Saul Guerrero short. You remember that? Uh-huh. Serial killer.
I thought he looked a little like Krang from Ninja Turtles
in a little
robot stomach.
Especially his teeth. Close up of that guy's teeth throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, with the mask on, he definitely looks like a member of Slipknot. Absolutely.
Yeah. But overall, yeah, it's a pretty simple, easy to follow story, a revenge tale of sorts. Revenge on heroin, on bath salts, on demon, everything you could think of. I love how the demon's kind of guy, it's like the demon's kind of being helpful for his cause, but, you know, it's a demon, so there's probably always going to be some...
He's being like a dick like Yoda in The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a dick the whole movie.
The entire way, saying, yeah, if you want to see your wife, come on, what are you waiting for? Go get this stuff done. And I think this was... Was this the first, like, kind of known movie from NecroStorm? Because this is the first thing I saw.
Yeah, it's their first movie, yeah.
Okay, so it actually is the first movie. Okay, yeah. Because it's definitely the first time I had ever heard of NecroStorm. Is Tater City NecroStorm, too?
Yeah, it's Guillermo del Toro directed that. That's the movie they did after this one, I think.
Okay, yeah. Because I want to say, like, yeah, it was not long after this that I'd seen the trailer for Tater City. But I think at the time, I didn't know which one was first, even though I did see this one first. But, yeah, it's just another movie. Like, if you are wanting to see gore, viciousness, visceral violence, like, you have a winner right here. And I don't think the budget hurts it at all. In fact, I've said many times, because with all the episodes we do on Fresh Cuts of modern movies that just go for, like, CGI for everything. It's, like, it's the complete opposite. And to me, I will always side on, like, low budget practical effects. I don't care how goofy they look. To me, they just it still looks better than CGI. Well, I would say like 90% of CGI. There are movies that have good CGI, but most of the time CGI is used as just a cheap way to do things. But this man, I think it's memorable. And if you've never seen anything from Necrostorm, it's a good place to start too, because while things do get out there, the story at least is like easy to follow. It's a revenge tale, just a twisted one. But
it's kind of interesting. This is the only one that they did in Italian, though, because all their other movies are in English.
I actually like that it's in Italian.
I wasn't saying that as a fault. It's weird because then their movies are like either dubbed in Italian or they're speaking Italian. It's weird.
No, Val,
a lot of them the same actors. You know what I mean?
All right, let me come in here real quick. God damn it. I just sat here and fangirled about Tokyo Gore Police, and now I'm going to do it again for Adam Chaplin. This movie has a lot of the same elements of Tokyo Gore Police, but it's also the complete opposite end of the spectrum when it comes to film quality. I was talking about how Tokyo Gore Police was the first gory movie I'd ever seen that looks really nice, that looked like it had a high budget, even though it was still shot on DV, that it still was put together really well. This, no, my friends, this is the sheer definition of grindhouse. I mean, we've got film scratches, we've even got video glitches in a couple of different scenes, which I love that aesthetic. It's not necessarily a cheaply made film, but it is a cheaply shot film in the sense that maybe the cameras and the film stock that they were using weren't necessarily up to snuff. But goddamn these kills. Whew. I mean, our cold open, literally before we get one word of dialogue, we see Adam completely decimate a whole patrol of police officers. And when I say decimate, I mean, folks, he's punching people's jaws off. He's doing the E Honda rapid fire punches. He does it like three or four times in the movie, which is why I call this a live action cartoon. Because I mean, it's E Honda from Street Fighter doing his thousand slap attack. But it's so fucking glorious. Some of the camera effects that they even use here, like when Adam is actively possessed, you know, when his eyes are whited over, you can kind of see the air particles around his hands moving differently than the rest of the air in the film. But it looks cool. Like, it doesn't look silly by any stretch of the imagination. Another awesome, awesome original thing that this movie does is the fact that, yes, Adam Chaplin is possessed by a demon, but it's not like the demon's spirit is in his body. The literal fucking demon is in his body. The demon lives behind Adam's right shoulder. So it's literally in his physical body. So it's the weirdest. It's even hard to really call this possession because Adam is acting on his own. Adam wants this revenge. It's not like just the demon wants the revenge. You know, obviously, we didn't really talk much about the story. Just real briefly, Denny is like the crime leader of this city. He runs everything, including the police. And in an early scene in the movie, he basically sets Adam Chaplin's wife on fire because she owes him money. I guess she probably borrowed some money off him, didn't pay it back in time, and he literally sets her on fire. That is CG, by the way. The fire in this is CG.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't look ultra great, but it's acceptable considering how the rest of the movie is. Since the movie has that very gritty grindhouse style, that fire scene isn't bad. But then the fact that the wife doesn't even fucking die. Literally, he sets her on fire. She is covered, I mean covered, with black third-degree burns from head to toe, and she still somehow survives. It's so fucking cruel. Later in the film, Adam actually does mercy kill his wife, but it's a confusing scene because he almost does it with anger. Like, I couldn't tell if he was mercy killing his wife or if he was frustrated. like that he still couldn't find Denny to get his revenge. So he literally smashes his own wife's head in. It could have been the demon too. Potentially the demon maybe forced Adam to do that. But I don't know if it was a mercy kill or if it was just a frustration kill because Adam was just so pissed off. But it definitely comes out of nowhere. It's a complete shock because he's literally in the hospital room with her. She's on a breathing apparatus, covered from head to toe in bandages. And the demon just starts taunting him again and taunting him like the demon
yeah,
does throughout
like
the entire movie.
Uh-huh. The cigarette guy from Beetlejuice.
Kinda. It weirded me out that the demon had human hands. Like, they took the trouble to put makeup on the face of the actor to make him look demonic, but then the hands are just normal. Just normal human hands, which it almost got me thinking, like, I thought that was a purposeful choice and that we were going to get a reveal later of maybe the demon wasn't actually a demon. But obviously, this thing is living in his shoulder, so it's very obviously a demon. I love the fact that every time the demon comes out, Adam has an upside-down cross burned on his right shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they set his wife on fire, she was wearing her crucifix necklace. And when Adam found her body, she was still tied to the chair, burnt up. He went to hug her. She puts her arms around him while still holding the crucifix. And then the crucifix literally burns a scar, an upside down crucifix, into his back shoulder. The point being is that every time the demon appears, it leaves a blood spray upside down crucifix on the wall wherever Adam was standing. And I fucking love that. His calling card is a bloody upside down crucifix. How fucking cool. This Satanist is very happy, my friends. Let me tell you. I am a very happy guy watching this movie.
It's cool because it's like even in the title of the movie, like the upside down crucifix, it's like.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't know the context of it until you watch the movie. And oh, God, yeah. What a payoff. This movie has two of the best kills of their type that I've ever seen in my life. The first one is a hatchet to the face, or a meat cleaver. I have never seen a meat cleaver enter a face so effectively without a cut, even. I mean, without a camera cut, I mean. Like, the meat cleaver to the face scene is fucking epic in this. And like I said, Mike, the assassin in this particular scene, Mike Carrera, just literally buries a meat cleaver in this homeless guy's face like four times. It is – I can't even describe what his face looks like after Mike buries the meat cleaver.
He fucked him up.
That kill – yeah, big time. So that literally, best cleaver to the face I've ever seen in my life. The other best kill, best impaling I've ever seen in my life.
It's the best.
I mean, Cannibal Holocaust.
Yeah,
Cannibal Holocaust had one of the most impressive impalings we've ever seen before. But in this movie, we actually get to see Adam do it. We don't just see the after effect. He literally jams this fucking metal pole up one of Denny's son's asses.
Derek.
Straight
his
up his
Derek.
Ass. Yeah, Derek. Oh, that's right. Derek and Ben. And literally, the pole then comes up through his body and out one of his shoulders, and fucking Adam is walking around with this guy like a fucking marionette, like it's his little puppet on a stick. I'm sorry, I fucking love this so much. And then one of the final blows in the movie is he uses Derek on a stick as a weapon. And when he uses it, both Derek and the person who's getting hit by Derek explode into a fucking cloud of just blood and God. Oh my! My God! I have such a hard on right now. I cannot tell you. Jesus! Yeah, I'm sorry, my friends. This is one of the most guilty pleasure, glorious, gory fucking films ever. On top of the fact that the people that he's killing are all shitty. You know what I mean? So it's not like we have to watch good, innocent people.
This whole town
people.
Is shitty.
This whole fucking city is garbage. It's an absolute shit town. Obviously, the only likable person that we have to see get harmed is his wife, of course.
Yeah.
But luckily, that scene is quick. You know, they don't linger on it for too long. It's not like they It's not like Mandy where we have to watch Mandy get burned alive the entire time, you know? It's a lot quicker.
And then there's the final boss battle.
Exactly. And oh my God, the final battle between Adam and Denny, holy fucking shit. Like I said, folks, some of the easily the best hatchet to the face and the best impaling I've ever seen in my 54 years on this fucking planet. Just glorious, glorious kills. Some really interesting characters, too. Like, you know, Denny's sons. It's like these are the sons of a crime lord, basically a guy who runs an entire city. And they're just dipshit cowards. It's so fucking funny. I mean, I guess entitlement will do that to somebody. When your dad is king of the city, you don't really have to answer to anybody. But goddamn, I really wish that at least one of them was like kind of a badass type, just like his dad. Like maybe not all mutated like his dad, but at least, you know, not a wimpy bitch, you know, basically, because Ben and Derek both turn out to be just complete useless idiots, but at least both of their deaths are absolutely glorious, so there's that at least. But
it's funny you guys referenced Mandy, because when I was watching this time, I kept thinking, I was like, man, this is like the bastard stepchild of Mandy and the Crow, because like of the revenge aspect, you know.
I'll definitely go with that. Oh my God, and Adam Chaplin himself. I mean, this actor, holy shit, he is buff.
It's the director.
Is that the fucking director? Okay,
Emilio DeSante. Yeah.
Holy fuck, I'm not gay, but I would let this man take me if he wanted. I mean, holy fuck, he's built like a Greek god. he's got long hair. Jesus Christ.
He's one of the co-founders of Necrostorm, Emilio DeSante. His brother.
That makes sense.
His brother plays Derek in the movie, Giglio, who directs a lot of
the movies. Yeah, yeah, I see that too. Oh, that's so cool. It's a family affair. Yeah. But yeah, like I said, Adam, because that's the other thing too, is there's scenes in this movie that are like in slow motion, some that are in slow motion and some that are in fast motion, where he's doing almost like superhero type shit, except that it's bloody as fuck and violent and everything. But I mean, this guy is literally like an MCU hero.
He's like Riccio, like punching holes for people.
Thank you, Riccio. Absolutely. That's who he reminds me of. Just decimating fools left and right. Goddamn. I'm going to shut up here because, like I said, I could talk for hours about it. And I don't know if I gave Derek a chance to talk about it. So, Derek, come on in here and talk about Adam Chaplin.
I can't say as much as has already been said. It's a nasty little movie, you know. It just feels dirty. Like, when like that whole scene with, like, fucking Rat Jason Mewes.
That guy was fucked up. His face was all tore up.
Mike knows who I'm talking about. He's laughing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, hell yeah, dude. Yeah. I mean, everybody in this movie, almost every character in this movie is exactly that, a character.
Like he turns when he turns that cop into a piece of gum on the wall.
And that's one of the early kills in the film, too. He literally pastes a guy up to the fucking wall.
I'm watching it, and he's, like, questioning him. Like, how is this guy supposed to talk?
Exactly. He's sitting there going, you have 10 seconds to answer me. But the guy is literally flattened on the wall. He's just one eyeball sticking out. His teeth are all falling out. He's gurgling. Like, he can't even make words. Maybe and Adam still gives him a countdown. And
fucking blows him away.
Oh my God, that was so fun. Wow. Yeah, and the fact too that character is the crooked police chief too, so it makes it an even more glorious kill that Adam took him out.
Yeah. The whole like final battle with Denny too, it's like fucking he's flying in the air shit and doing Super Saiyan bombs.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Honestly, if I had to do like one negative thing about the movie, that's the whole final battle. It does get kind of tedious because he keeps doing like some of the same attacks over and over again.
Well, because we've already seen, because technically the beginning of the movie is the end. So we end up seeing a lot of the same cop kills.
Other than that, that's just me on rewatch noticing that
Okay.
Maybe they could cut that a little bit, but other than that, This movie's fucking great, you know, like.
And like Mike said too, this movie is not just about the gore. There's actually a solid little story here. Yeah, it's a basic revenge film, but a lot of the cool story elements of this revolve around Denny, our main villain, and his backstory. Like, his backstory to me is absolutely fascinating, because if you think Denny is a piece of shit, his father must have been like king of the pieces of shit.
Well, spoiler alert. If you didn't know this, Venom, there's actually a sequel to this movie being made right now.
Oh, I'm sold.
We're Adam Chaplin has to fight Denny's father.
Oh, shit, he's still alive. See, they don't imply that in the movie, but that's cool. I'm down with that.
Yeah.
I mean, because we do see him briefly. We see, in flashback scenes, obviously, we see him briefly. But my God, is he a sadistic piece of shit. So it makes sense that his son would grow up to be a mutated crime lord. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, so that should be interesting.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
Nice. And then some of the differences between the gore, between the two films, like I mentioned with Tokyo Gore Police, that it's so crazily over the top. And so, like, it's got that Japanese aesthetic, it's bright and colorful, so the gore doesn't really get taken all that seriously. Like, when I'm watching Tokyo Gore Police, I'm laughing half the time. When I'm watching Adam Chaplin, there are actually kills in here that are uncomfortable, that you're like, oh my God, what the fuck? You know, like they're still glorious as all hell, but they're not, they don't have that fun factor that Tokyo Gore Police has.
Yeah.
It's still here, but just not as prominent as
it's because most of the Tokyo Gore Police people are all fucking mutated anyway, so it's like,
yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
big time, yeah. And now, what else can we say about this without giving away too much of the story? Because obviously, we're not, this being maybe a lesser known film, we're not probably, you know, we're not going to give away the ending necessarily. Just know that there is a big confrontation at the end, and somebody gets fucked up.
A lot. He gets fucked up a lot.
A lot. Yeah. But all back to the backstory of Denny, like the sadistic actions of his father, the fact that his father was working on a chemical, what was the name of it? Neurokrill 3, which basically reanimates dead flesh. So basically, the dad, Denny's father, was doing this for the military. So I don't know if they were planning on using this stuff to resurrect their dead soldiers so they could go back out in the field and kill some more. They don't really get into that aspect of it. But the mere fact that the father created this chemical, the chemical then infected the boy's dog, the dog then attacks Denny, and then the dad forces Denny to kill the dog. It's like, what a fucking asshole. You did this. This is your fuck up. You fix it. You know? So, yeah. Just this whole backstory, it's equal parts fascinating and frustrating. So, yeah, this is definitely not just for the gore. Neither of these films really are just for the gore. They both have decent little stories. They're both basically revenge films, ultimately. And, you know, they're both put together pretty well. Like I said, Tokyo Gore Police is the more polished, pretty-looking movie, bright, colorful. Like, the opening scene is very bright and colorful. Even the score from Tokyo Gore Police, which none of us mentioned during the review, is fucking amazing. Like, the main theme is great, but then all the wacky songs that they played throughout, too, were fucking funny. Like, there would be some kill scenes where they would be playing music that sounded like it came from a kids show, like a Japanese kids show. So you're watching all this glorious gore, but listening to kids music. I love that dichotomy. This one definitely takes itself a little bit more seriously, not as much comedy, at least not as much intentional comedy, but still
awesome characters. I also love that both movies had fucking, like, police with fucking armor, helmets, and shit.
Exactly! Both of them have shitty police departments.
Yeah, I forgot. I totally slipped my mind when we were talking about Tokyo Gore Police, where it almost has, like, a RoboCop-esque satire pointed at the idea of privatization of law enforcement with, like, the little interludes promoting, like, these crazy ass mutated police and why they're so good, and hey, we just go out there and clean the streets for you, like in a very vague way, when what that really means is just murdering the hell out of people.
We're citizens.
Yep. And, yeah. So, I mean, like I said, you guys got to shut me up because I can talk about these movies for a very long time.
I'm very curious how the sequel is going to go. That's.
Oh, Mike, you know what? If it premieres in Italy, I'm flying out there to see it. I don't care. I fucking want to see this movie as soon as possible. Same thing with Tokyo Vorpe.
Because I already pre-ordered this.
Oh, is it going to physical right away? Okay, well, that's good.
Well, the thing is, if you pre-order it, you could actually get your, like, you actually help the movie being made. Because
Cool. Like a Kickstarter type thing? Nice.
Yeah. And they get your name in the movie and shit, yeah.
I love it. All right, folks, so I'm going to cut off the festivities here because, like I said, I could talk about this stuff for days. I mean, this was by far the most fun episode of 2024 for me. Just if you guys could see my face, my smile has never left my face since we started recording this. Maybe that small part when I was yelling at Jason Blum, but otherwise, it's been ear-to-ear grins on this episode. So, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and turn it back over to Mike and just say thanks for joining us and keep it gory, my friends.
Yeah, not much else to add. I mean, we really dove into these movies. We're all fans. Sounds like it. they're all great. I've always appreciated gore. When I was younger, I would always seek out gory movies. As I've gotten older, I don't necessarily seek them out, but I still appreciate the hell out of them. I like them when they pack like a story in there too, because it just helps you get through like the any type of like, you know, space between like the gore gags. Both these movies, they're just engaging outside of the gore itself as well. It's interesting characters, over the top, absurd characters. It just makes for a really fun time with both of them.
Yeah, definitely two movies to shut off your brain and just have some fun with. Don't take them seriously. Don't try to find the social commentary, even though there is social commentary there, obviously. There's
especially
classism.
Especially in Tokyo Gore Police,
Yeah, there's classism in both of these films, absolutely. So, yeah, there is still subtext there, but ultimately, folks, turn off your brain and just enjoy a good, bloody fucking movie. And I think both of our movies this episode were definitely something that all horror fans have to experience. Again, if you can handle the gore. If you can handle the gore, these two movies are absolute must-watches for you, along with a bunch of other movies that we've talked about, like Machine Girl, and even some that we haven't talked about, like, Vampire Girl versus Frankenstein Girl? I
also
fucking love that movie.
Shimaru,
yeah, I figured that was him. Fucking another over-the-top, balls-of-the-walls, gory film.
I love the Vampire Girl in that movie, too.
Oh, big time. Oh, my God. So, all right, folks, there you go. You've got some homework to do. Go out there and check out some extreme gore and let us know what your favorite is. Hit us up on the socials. Let us know what kind of gory stuff you like, or maybe you're not into the gore at all.
You might get more next episode. Spoiler.
I'm ready. I'm ready to start like a 3 or 4 episode streak of just extreme fucking gore. Yeah. I'm sick of these pussy-footing Blumhouse jump scare mystery films.
Yeah, fucking William Castle bullshit. We're going fucking fucked up on this show now.
You know, I contemplated doing Olaf Eitenbach for this episode. I contemplated bringing two of his movies to this, but I wanted to bring something with a little bit better storytelling and, you know, more enjoyable characters. So, yeah. Oh. Burning Moon, we'll have to wait for another
come on. Olaf Eitenbach and Burning Mundo is airing in that movie?
Oh, God, dude. Burning Moon's one of my favorite movies ever. It's literally one of the first ultra-gory movies I ever saw.
It's like literally like the best Sean video movie ever made.
Potentially. Also one of the best getting split in half effects I've ever seen. It just that fucking bisection at the end of the second segment is fucking glorious. All right, let's stop talking about gore, Mike. Come on, cut us off here.
All right, well, that's going to wrap up our discussion on tons of gore in only two movies. Lots of gore to go around, so. But one other thing we need to go around the cast and do is ask everyone what else they've been up to, what else they have out for people to listen to. So I'll just start with myself. Since there's really only, other than the main shows we do, I got one guest spot that is already now available, and that was, as of now, of lists of recording this episode, it's the latest episode of 22 Shots of Moods and Horror. I finally made it back after what we believe has been like 2.5-3 years.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I jumped on with them to talk about three movies under the urban horror type or subgenre in Death by Temptation, Bones. I always want to call it Jimmy Bones, but it's Bones. And then
Bones.
Snoop Dogg's Hood of Horrors. So check that out. And like, you know,
Snoop Dogg talking that episode.
Yeah, and for anyone that listens to 22 Shots knows it's always like a good 90 minutes to almost 2 hours before you get to the movie. So lots of horror talk.
Sometimes 3 hours
in the intro. Yeah, could be depending on how big the cast. It could happen. So check that out, and I'll kick it over to Venom.
All right, for me, let's see. You can hear Derek and myself on the latest episode of Creature Comforts. That's episode number 25. Where we looked at Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire, and had a blast talking about that one. Maybe not quite as good a time as Godzilla Minus One, but still a worthy entry in the franchise. So check out that episode. That is available as we speak.
Adam Wingard, hell yeah.
Adam Wingard and Dan Stevens. speaking of Dan Stevens, he plays an awesome character in that New Abigail movie.
Oh,
he plays like the complete opposite character of the guy that that he played in Godzilla Kong, so it's pretty interesting. Dan Stevens is actually I'm getting more every time I see him. I'm more and more surprised by his acting chops. So yeah, check out Dan Stevens. Anyway, let's see. The Crystal Lake Gift Shop, episode 4, is the latest episode where, once again, Miss Lacey Liu joins us as we review an episode of Friday the 13th, the series, which aired from 1987 to 1990. We are planning the next episode because the next episode of the series is actually the Halloween episode from the first season. So we're looking forward to jumping on that one sooner than later. So look out for episode 5. Hopefully, like I said, sooner than later. I'll let you know when it's available. As far as guest spots go, I am currently a guest on the latest episode of Cut to the Chase, where we looked at the Omen franchise. Yes, we talked about and reviewed all 6 Omen movies, and that does include the brand new movie, The First Omen. So, you know, check that out. It is a long episode. I mean, we're talking about 6 movies, obviously. But, I mean, obviously, if you like Dan and Lacey, then check out that episode and see what I brought to the table. Because you guys know I try to dig deep in movies, you know, for whenever I do a guest spot, I try to dig deep into those movies.
Oh, yeah, bring a little something. Omen 4, huh?
Oh, Omen 4. There's nothing to go deep on with Omen 4.
Michael Lerner's glasses. That's the only thing.
Oh, my God. So that's the latest episode of Cut to the Chase. And then this will be the last time I bring this one up. Just recently, I did a live YouTube stream with Sledgehammer Horror. And what it was they brought on a bunch of podcasters and content creators to ask them a pair of would you rather questions. And of course, they are horror related would you rather questions. Now, obviously, some of those questions are going to be very basic. You know, would you rather be in Camp Crystal Lake or Haddonfield? You know, silly ones like that. But some of them get really, really deep and they end up generating some pretty
Is there any,
heavy.
Like, banging scream girls?
No, God, no. Stop that.
Well, you know, would you rather Jamie Lee Curtis or?
Oh, no, nothing sexual, thankfully. I'm an adult.
No, I know. I was just curious. When I hear would you rather, that's the first thing my mind goes.
No, you're 100% valid, definitely. And like I said, we did get some of the very basic would you rathers, but nothing with final girls, I don't think. One person actually asked a really, and I probably shouldn't be giving this away, but I'm going to say it anyway because it was a really interesting question. They basically asked, what do you prefer, or what would you rather keep, 2022, and that's the entirety of the year, all horror movies that have come out, or the remainder of 2024? And that turned into a giant conversation about all the horror movies that we got still coming this year, and then all the great horror that came out in 2022. So that turned out to be one of the more interesting would you rather questions. But like I said, it's a live stream, so it's a long one. It's about a 3-hour stream. But if you are interested in seeing my segment specifically, go to the Sledgehammer Horror YouTube channel and look for the Would You Rather live event from April 11th, and you can fast forward to the 1 hour and 15 minute mark of that video to see my ugly face on camera. if anybody's interested to see what Mr. Venom looks like, check out that. And then I think that's all I have. I have one more guest spot in the works, but it's not confirmed yet, so I'm going to keep that one under my hat for now. And that's all I got, Mike.
All right, Derek, are you out there right now?
Preach a conference. Just watch it.
Nice.
That's it. If anybody wants me, they know where to reach me.
All right. With that said, the next episode, I think the rotation goes back to Derek, correct?
Yes.
Yeah,
and I know, like, there's a potential for a guest, so I don't know what we'll do if we're just going to tell the guest, hey, your option for now is just be a guest on the episode where Derek makes his picks, or maybe have it's either that or, like, they can skip that and then be on my rotation. We'll figure it out. It's only in the early stages, so we'll see what works best for everyone. But, let's see, today's only the 21st of April, so I should have this out still in April, so then we can look to sometime, like, early May to, like, do another episode.
Absolutely.
Can you imagine back-to-back episodes where we Derek's actually set a date month. And stay to it?
Oh, it's Derek's birthday month, imagine?
Nice.
Don't schedule anything on Derek's birthday.
That's fine. You good?
I'm working. Oh, hell no. I don't even podcast on my birthday. Fuck that. I vegetate on the couch. Yeah. That's what I do, and I love it.
I vegetate and my lactate.
There you go. Oh, God.
All right. Cool. Well, with that said, it's time to get out of here. The flames of hell are calling us. So let's go. Jump back in. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Catch you on the next episode. Actually, the next episode will be big number 60. So,
oh boy.
It'll be fun. All right. Let's say bye to our listeners.
Goodbye.
Remember, folks, don't piss off Adam Chaplin. He might turn you into a human popsicle.
Or a fucking splat on the wall.
Gore, baby, gore.
Penis.